welcome to the all-new Geek Actually Podcast, episode 3. This is the week we are going to talk about privacy again. We're going to talk about recycling, we're going to have some fun with lasers, and we're going to fear the robots. Well, we're bringing back an old favorite for weird food. And
it's almost the three R's. Sorry to interrupt you. Robots, recycling...
Well, screw the rest of the intro. I'm David McVeigh, and that's Dave Longo. How are you, Dave? We're off
I'm
to a good start.
I'm too busy thinking about the magic number.
We're off to a good start. I was going to say we are bringing back an old favorite for weird food. You'll see. And we're going to talk about Disney's new big budget live action straight retelling of the 1950s Cinderella. And spoilers, it's not as bad as I make it out to be. All right. So, Dave, how's your week been?
Pretty good, Dave. Yeah. Yourself?
Not too bad. We've been hanging out for the last few hours.
That's right. We're used to talking.
Let's make uncomfortable small talk.
Yes.
In that case, hello, where's my phone? Let's move on to some headlines about stuff that we don't really care about, because I did go down to the newsagent today, unlike last week, and I did actually shoot something, and realistically, the news hasn't changed that much, because you know what? One of the things I've discovered? Most of the magazines are monthly.
are they really?
I think so. Oh, really? So a lot of them are the same. But there was one headline that caught my eye. First of all, actually, there's two headlines that caught my eye. The first one is Elle Macpherson is having a baby. Can I remind you that she's 51? And this could be wrought with difficulty. That's not necessarily a silly thing, but it's like... I don't know if it's such a wise idea to have a baby at 51, but whatever, her choice.
Remember when we used to have to classify her as an actor? Batman and Robin. Wasn't she in that?
Was
Edge?
She ever truly an actor, though? That's the question.
Not in Batman and Robin.
No. she was, look, Elle Macpherson was one of those ones where everybody would have her posters and her wallpapers and everybody was drooling all over her. I never actually thought that much. I mean, yeah, she was attractive. You know, she was a supermodel, whatever. But she wasn't... I mean, for me, I was always a Cindy Crawford guy.
Sure.
So that was kind of for me. But the headline that did catch my eye...
I remember Elle Macpherson well.
Biblically?
She was the race car driver, right?
I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know.
I'm going to move on. Now, the one that I did catch my eye was, let's just stress at this point that it would be fair to say that Kim Kardashian and Kanye West's child, North West, does my head in, is probably one of the most... neglected children in Hollywood, right? I mean, she has been known as an ornament and stuff like that. And she probably has like 17 nannies and her mother dyed her hair blonde. Remember she was saying that North doesn't really recognize. I don't think it was the blonde hair. I think the fact that North doesn't know who her mother is, you know? But the horrifying news on the cover of Famous Magazine this week is that it says Kanye and Kim are happy because we're pregnant with twins. So we're going to bring two more children.
The obvious joke here is East and West, I guess. West.
Well, we got Northwest. We can have
they
Southwest.
They might as well just call them like fuckface and like an asshole. Like they're already ruined for life, aren't they? Like,
well, they got first of all.
Actually, I take that back because Fuckface West is a pretty cool name.
I got to say, first of all, though, I'm very, very, very ashamed at Kim Kardashian because every name in her family starts with a K, and North doesn't. So
yeah,
we got the Kim and the Chloe and the I don't even know what all these.
Maybe they'll ostracize him further and they'll name the new twins like with K names.
You know what? They could just name them both the same name. It would really. You know, cut down on having to distinguish between them. They could just both call them South. And
I'm surprised that like the
Southwest one, Southwest two.
No, you know what they're going to do? Mark my words, Dave.
Yep.
They're going to call these twins, if it's a boy and a girl, they're going to call them Kanye and Kim. And it will be like Kanye West the third or something. Or Kanye
Kim West.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's move away from
They're going to look like mutants.
We're going to move away from that because I just don't give a shit.
Right, so, we gave them too much of a shit.
We did. That actually went on far longer than I thought it was. Somebody actually said to me the other day, why do you name your son Beck. Why do you do that?
Beck and Beyonce?
No. Beyonce. He likes Beyonce. It should be Beck and Taylor.
No, that's what I was going for. Right. He likes one of them.
Well, I say Beck and Taylor. And he'll actually say to, and he'll say to his children, "I'll let you finish, but
And when he's accidentally caught out by saying he hates his kids, he's like, no, I was just talking about
Taylor the other Smith. Ones. somebody asked me the other day, why do we do this section if we really don't care? Because it's, you know, it's funny.
Because it's funny, yeah. I got to laugh. I don't care about you. Yeah. Like,
we do this for us. Last week we got all serious with data retention and privacy, so I don't really want to get really serious anymore. But we will just give you an update on last week. We just should point out, once again, all of our stories, with the exception of one or two here and there, which I found, but with the most of our stories are actually brought to us by our researcher, Delta Knight. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Delta Knight. The data retention laws passed. The Senate. So basically, they are now in effect. They're now law. And they did address the journalist thing. Remember, we talked about the fact that journalists won't be able to have unnamed sources because you could just go back. They said, no, there will be protections. Yeah. They haven't said what.
They've just been very.
They've said, yeah. There will be protections. Yeah. We promise. by the way, I have a little bit of a cold for those wondering. So I've also been teaching all week. So my voice is gone. Mm. So if I sound a bit weird, that's just because I got a bit of a cold and my voice is gone.
With your nose pinched.
Yeah, I don't feel very well. This week's gig actually is brought to you by.
all right. So now that we're past all that stuff. Oh, no, there's actually one other one, which is we talked about this last night. I just throw this out there. I don't even want to go into detail on it. You can read the article by following the show note in the show notes. But the FBI apparently has been granted new powers, which says that they can actually put in tracking software into anybody's computer at any time. And the beautiful thing about this is that they can actually do it, and it's not actually geographic space. So theoretically, the FBI can be spying on you here in Australia because, well, you know, who cares? Because, well, you know, whatever. They decide that they wanted to. So even though they have no official jurisdiction here, too bad.
They're running out of X-Files to investigate.
Apparently. Yeah, apparently. So anyway, let's get on to some fun stuff. Do you know what happens to your old tech?
No.
Okay, so basically this actually fascinated me. I'm just going to clear some of these articles here. This is a slow as shit computer I'm dealing with. Come on. Oh, this one didn't even load. Oh, there it is. That's data retention. Move past that one. Good. So in this article, though, it was really fascinating. And there is actually a video that you can watch. But there are these plants. There's one in this particular video is actually in New York. And what they do is they describe we've so much tech being thrown out at this point that these plants are set up and they have big conveyor belts and machines. And what they do is they actually separate all the pieces.
Looks like my garage. This video
So they put these in here and it goes through a whole bunch of shredders. And then there goes through like rolling magnets and all that, which actually extract all the metal bits and drop the plastic apart and extract all the heavy metals from it and so forth. And when it comes out the end, it just looks like little piles of nothing. And it's had all of the stuff that can be recycled just shredded out of it.
What do you think the sentient robots of our future are going to think when they look at this?
They're going to say,
Papa!
Papa! No, look at the casualties.
He's still alive. We can rebuild
humans.
This is how it starts.
They're going to see us shredding up their brethren.
Can you imagine some robot hands like going through this stuff?
George, is that you?
robot cemetery.
But outside of that, there was also this other article which I thought was fascinating, which was this one particular artist whose name is here. Hold on a second. I will find it once my computer decides to load the article. Who basically goes through and extracts on all pieces of circuitry, there is very, very small quantities of gold and silver. Because some components are actually made of gold and silver. A lot of it is copper, but there's also a lot of gold and silver. And this artist, whose name is Ashley Heather, basically goes through, finds a bunch of junk, extracts those parts, melts it down, breaks it down into its primary components, and then makes silver and gold jewelry out of the metals from old circuit boards and old hardware components, which I think is fascinating.
That's really interesting.
I think it's fascinating, and it makes me really want to buy a piece of this jewelry. It's probably costs a fortune. Interestingly enough, she started, and I'm assuming Ashley is a she. I could be completely wrong. But they started apparently by reclaiming stuff from dark rooms because very small amounts of silver are used in developing fluids. Mm. And so what they would do is they would actually extract those very small amounts of silver out of dark rooms, and once they collected enough of it, they could melt it down, turn it into silver, and make it into jewelry. But now with dark rooms going away of the past, they needed to find another source for their metals, and it has become computer hardware, which I find fascinating.
It's amazing.
They make little ingots, basically, out of the very small trace amounts of silver and gold in circuit boards.
So these are like cufflinks that we're looking at now.
Looks like cufflinks to me. But the funny thing is, don't they look like little transistors?
Yeah, they do too. Yeah.
And this is just a lump. This lump here is actually the beginnings of it. This is actually copper with gold and silver all mixed together as a lump of metal. And this will be melted down, and those components will be extracted out of the meltdown. And they will get their pure silver. And look at this. The silver from a circuit board. All these pictures we're talking about you can find on our show notes if you follow the article link. It is fascinating stuff. And there's some of the jewelry that is actually made from the silver.
It's really quite clever as well.
It's very clever. And it makes it really unique. It makes it really unique jewelry. And these are the clever things that we can do to get rid of the mountains and mountains and mountains of waste that we are producing from our absolute obsession with getting the latest, newest hardware. It's interesting, in that recycling plant that I was showing you before, they actually get a whole bunch of machines that have never been used. Because what happens is stores overbuy, the stuff doesn't sell, they've got nothing to do with it.
Because it's outdated so quickly.
It just gets junked. Yeah. And so they're literally saying they're trashing brand new stuff. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting.
Even I'm just thinking about like what's in my garage.
I've got so much junk around.
I don't throw out anything. And it's kind of like...
So be responsible.
I go through a new computer every 2 years or something.
Recycle your old computer stuff and your old TVs and your old electronics. All your old electronics, because there is stuff in there that can be used. And remember, some of it's not renewable. Some of the materials in computers is stuff that is going to eventually run out. And we use it just without even thinking about it. And so we need to actually think about what is recyclable and what we can use. Okay, so from that's your public service announcement. Yes.
Brought to you by the good people
at Geek Actually. So from our public service announcement, let's talk about clever banking. All right, so this I thought was fascinating. This was an article in Gizmodo. Once again, Delta Knight, thank you very much for sending this through. This is possibly the future. So up until now, all of our banking, when we go to an ATM machine, is magnetic strip. Australia is now getting to a point where we're using the little computer chip on it. And of course, the latest big thing is near-field communication. So using your smartphone or a card that has a near-field communication chip on it to just basically tap and pay. The problem with all of these technologies is that it's trackable or it's hackable in some way. So with a magnetic stripe, when you put it in, they can put a card skimmer into the machine and actually record your number as it's going in. And let's face it, near-field communication is great, but theoretically, and this is only theory, I don't do this to fearmonger because I do have near field. I'm not the foil hat wearing sort of person. But theoretically, if you want to just be aware of your surroundings, somebody could have a chip reader, a near field communication chip reader, have it down in their pocket, and as they brush against you, it could be extracting information from your tap to pay cards.
It's quite common with handbags, apparently.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this is a possibility. Okay, and because it's a possibility, you got to start thinking, what is the perfect way to do this?
And it's the Superman Free scheme.
Well, there's that too. That's a very famous one. Grab the percentages or the point fractions of a cent and collect them all together. This is actually clever banking. So this is actually from, I think it's England? Give me a second. Or is it an
American? Canadian.
Canadian. Basically, it's saying that you will use your smartphone and a password instead of using any form of communication. You never actually touch the ATM. The idea is you walk up, you hit the button that says no contact or no card. You've got a password on your phone. So your phone is already password protected. And I guess you could use like fingerprint readers or what have you. And on the screen, a QR code comes up and you just photograph the QR code. It basically gives your phone the signal or the information that is actually on hand. They communicate however they communicate, and the money just pops out of the machine.
Wow. And so, that's actually happening right now.
This is happening. It's being tested at this point. And so let's have a look here. It says, so if we look at them, somewhere along the line, there's one part that I've missed here, which is how does your phone talk back to this machine? But I guess that's actually through communication. Let me have a look here. It says, the ATM screen displays a QR code, which you can scan with the app, and the machine splits. Oh, right, because your app is talking to the bank.
Of course.
Your app is talking to the bank. So all it's doing is basically giving the bank teller machine instructions, spit money out now. and the teller machine spits out money. And the QR code tells your banking app on your phone which ATM you're standing in front of. Mm. So it can pop out the right music. Wouldn't it be funny if it got the wrong QR code and somewhere across town, $50 popped out?
Yeah, it's just like an ATM on its own. Somebody walking by
going, oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're parked opposite an ATM with your window down and just all of a sudden money shoots in you.
But I thought this was kind of cute. So this is doing away with the need for... to actually communicate or tap
ATMs all around the world have been giving out money, money, money.
Hey, this is a Stephen King novel waiting to happen. All right, and God love them. Nobody wastes more money or time than hardcore geeks. Without doubt, hands down, they are amazing at just being able to do the most useless crap in the world and yet make it so cool that why wouldn't we want to do it?
Oh, my God. I just got to say that my jaw's dropped because I don't see these articles in advance.
No.
This is amazing.
So this guy using a laser and a machine that actually advances the little paper invaders has recreated Space Invaders for real using a laser, and the laser actually burns... the little paper Space Invaders. I'm going to play video here. This has got no dialogue, so there's no point in actually putting this through the board or anything like that. But just so that Dave can see what we're talking about. So basically, he controls it, and the invaders actually move forward on a little thing, and he fires a laser, and they can hit the little barricades just like in Space Invaders.
That's amazing.
And you can see this video when you actually go to our show notes. The only thing is, it's not really a Space Invaders game, or... it would be if they fired lasers back at him. And yeah. I think that would be fair that they have to shoot lasers back at him. I think that would be funny. Wow. So he's playing it on a computer screen, but what he's actually controlling is the actual laser. Yeah. Oh. There he's burning one of the pylons. And it actually fires off this laser to burn the little space. And why did he do this? Because he could.
Why not?
And they advance on their little mechanical robot arm, and the whole bit. This is just genius. It's genius. How much fun would that be to play with? But as I say, it's not challenging unless they shoot back. And here's he's demonstrating the firepower. So yeah, that's pretty cool. As I say,
that is very, very
cool. Only geeks can.
I want this.
I want to be able to play this game. Video in the show notes, people. Go have a look at the show notes.
What did you do last night? Oh, guys, I played Space Invaders.
Oh, that's old school. No.
This ain't your daddy's Space Invaders.
And before we go on to this next story, I think we need to play. Oh, I've lost the theme. Oh, no. I've lost the theme. Here, we need to play this.
No, we got to connect, Dave.
Oh, we need to connect.
We got
to
get on.
Okay, let me just dial real quick. And we're in.
I know Kung Fu.
Okay, so why do we play the most annoying sound in the world? And quite frankly, it is one of the most annoying sounds in the world. I should have actually put in an apology beforehand. A journalist in America basically took the challenge. Somebody said, I bet you can't live at 50K on a 50K modem for a week in today's era. And he took the challenge. They actually said for 3 days, he said, he put on his big machismo hat and said, I can do it for a week. Well, as it turns out, that may not be as easy as you think. So first of all, if you read the article, which the article in all detail is on our show notes, and I love these graphics. What do you think? Look at these loading graphics. They're simulations, but God, they're good.
This brings me back, like...
All right, so basically the first hurdle that he had to fight was, of course, where do you get a 56K modem from? And if you do find one, you don't have anywhere to connect into. You can't get that sound because nobody has 50K connection spots. In 1998, this was the year the 56K modems came out. So basically, he had to live his life like it was 1998 is kind of what the goal was here. So he actually... got a connection,
rules.
And he there's rules. He actually clocked his modem speed down so that it actually mimicked the speed of 56K, so he could only work at that bandwidth. Mm. And he had to also do all the other things in the 90s. So when he watched movies, for instance, he had to watch them on VHS or DVD. Mm. Because, and he said he actually quite likes watching movies on VHS anyway, and he has a player, so that was all right. He was late for work on the first day because daylight savings changed, and of course, he wasn't allowed to use his iPhone, and so daylight savings didn't automatically set on his iPhone. He actually had to be careful because they kept trying to blow it everywhere he went to, because everywhere he went to had things like touch screens and stuff like that. And of course, those didn't exist, so he said it was constantly shining. He actually referred to it as being in the bubble. And he said being in the bubble was actually proving harder and harder and harder throughout the week. He tried to watch a YouTube video, and after 20 minutes, it gave up and didn't even load. Basically, most websites would actually come up as just text because they would fail.
Yeah.
Basically, the end of all of this is that it is virtually impossible to live
without a high speed
connection. It is almost impossible. And he goes through this article.
What about with 128K mode?
I think the same situation would happen. I think we are at a point. The slowest you could actually get would be 256.
Yeah.
And that's what people get clocked down to when they exceed data caps.
Mm.
Is they get put down to 256. But here's the other kicker that he doesn't actually mention in this article at all, which is there is a difference between. He talks about trying to watch porn, which is one of the funniest things in the world because porn doesn't even load. One of the things he doesn't talk about, though, of course, is that a broadband modem clocked down to 56K is still a better connection than a 56K modem. Because 56K modems would be dependent on line speeds and all sorts of other stuff. And remember when we were on 56K modem, it would actually get slower and it would get faster and it would change and so forth. He had a good, stable connection. It just was slow. So... man, I couldn't do it.
This is crazy. This reminds me, I saw this thing. It's like Netflix running through a Super Nintendo. And they try and watch House of Cards season 3 on the, and it's amazing. It's like this 8-bit House of Cards.
he actually puts this into context about watching video. He said that to put it into perspective, approximately 1 gigabyte of HDTV data, which we take for granted, delivered in 2015 speeds amounts to about 7 minutes of video.
Wow.
He said to get that sort of information, he says a gigabyte of information, he says 1 gigabyte of information took him about 5 hours to receive. I remember these heady days.
I remember these days well. You wanted a song and it took 2 days to download.
Well, he actually talks about downloading albums. He actually talked about trying to download 2 different albums and had to give up halfway through. He couldn't get them. So it just makes you realize how lucky we are in the age that we are, that we have these kind of speeds. And he says he was challenged every step of the way. He had to do things like on his phone, he had to turn off data connection because there was no data connection on your phone. So he could just use it as a phone.
Did he make it to the end?
He said he basically was, it was almost impossible to live within the bubble. I don't think he actually made it to the end. By the end, I think he said it was just impossible.
It must have been.
Anyway, it's a fascinating article.
That's amazing. I'm definitely going
to
read that one.
Go and have a look at that article. It's in our show notes. And Delta, thank you for bringing that to our attention because that was a joy.
That's amazing.
It also made me go out and find this sound. I won't make you go through all that again. I won't make you go through that again. But this brings us to this.
Your move, creep.
Oh, those Japanese. There is nobody who's bringing the robot apocalypse on faster than the Japanese, except maybe DARPA.
Is this the Sony Dream Robot?
No. This is even better. In Japan, they've actually got a children's television show for the first time hosted by a humanoid robot. Now, do you know what? This humanoid robot is so amazing. So basically, the robot's name is Pepper.
Pepper.
It's for the Ohasta.
Pepper loves you.
It's for the Ohasta Mornings Children Television Show in Tokyo. And it starts on April 6th. It's the first time an automaton will front a daily show anywhere in the world. Basically, my favorite part, because my first thought was, okay, it's a puppet, mm-hmm. right? But no, this 4-foot or 1.2 meter robot touted as the world's first automaton that can read human emotions, such as fear and terror.
Vulnerability.
It was developed by the Aldebaran Robotics Company for Japan's SoftBank. This was a French company that came in. And it cost... Huh. They brought this company in for $100 million in 2012 to develop this. This robot actually is also used in the SoftBank stores, which is their telephone stores. Mm-hmm. And so this robot greets you at the door, and it can tell your emotions. So when you walk in ready to go, fuck you guys, it turns around and goes, fuck you back, yeah. right? I guess.
Yeah.
You
know? Like, that's the fine print of this article, where it's like, Pepper also contains 6 automatic machine guns. And
oh, you joke. But you know what? The part that I like... Are you ready?
Yeah, it says, I won't blow it.
Pepper is connected to its cloud-based intelligence software via Wi-Fi. It is equipped with 4 microphones, 2 high-definition cameras, touch sensors, 2 sonar, 6 lasers, and 3D sensors behind its eyes. Why does it have lasers?
That's in case any of the kids want to kill it. I guess they go crazy.
That's like
it's always set to stun these ones.
No. Yeah. This is when it goes into battle mode. Its eyes turn red. Its eyes turn red, and it starts vaporizing the children that disobey.
You're watching the TV show, and it's just Pepper's like, I love...
I love you. Ultron rules.
It's perfect.
It needs to sing Daisy.
Kids, do you want to hear a song?
Daisy. Oh, Pepper, you're going to kill us all.
Okay. I read your lips, Dave.
And it looks so innocent, but
so evil.
But it's holding its hand up like it's about to fire its lasers out of its fingertips or something at you.
That's the arc reactor.
Oh, no, there's the laser. It's in its forehead.
Look right here, kids.
I'm blinded by the light. And you know what? People sit there and they say, oh, you guys make so much out of this. You guys are silly. You're ridiculous. And how can you take any of this seriously? Hello? There is an article here that is actually anti-robot protests are now starting to happen.
Can I just say I've read 4 books on robotics in the last 5 months?
I like the saying, robots won't care. How true. Okay, so basically, a group in Austin, Texas... at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. Sorry, I misread that. They have started to protest against robots, basically saying that we have to be responsible with development of things like AI and stuff like that because it could lead to things that are dangerous. Elon Musk, the writer, it is so they think so highly of this cause. Elon Musk himself has donated $10 million to the Future of Life Institute to keep AI beneficial to humanity and the idea of developing it so that there are protections in place and we don't just roar ahead like human beings often do. I want that t-shirt. There's a t-shirt here that just says stop the robots. Basically, we as humans tend to plow along blindly thinking... Aren't we cool? Aren't we cool? Look what we make. But the problem is that AI does represent a situation where if it goes out of control, it could be the thing of science fiction. It could be the moment where robots gain sentience. And if they gain sentience, you know...
All it takes is one lab in MIT.
Or DARPA.
But I mean, like, you read about some of these stuff, because I'm not joking when I've read all these books. Yeah. Like, I'm researching AI at the moment for a project I'm working on outside of this. And it's like there's different schools to AI. And one of the schools is, like, they want to design primitive robots that are equivalent to primitive apes, like, from our early biology.
Yeah.
And the kind of thing is we want to develop them primitive so that we can see if it can develop on its own. And these are, like the smaller sections of robotics.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's neural networks and all that other stuff. But this stuff here, if you design an empty shell that can learn, that could lead to significant leaps in artificial intelligence.
Correct.
But
What's it learning?
What's it learning?
Yes.
You know, yeah, exactly. You know?
And we also have to remember that if we start developing robots with emotions, we know how illogical and how irrational emotions can become.
Yeah.
Now, if you give a $100 million piece of hardware that might be armed emotions and it effectively has PMS, we're doomed.
Yeah,
you
we're
know?
Done.
It's like, so we have to look at it and go, we have to look at it and be very careful. And
the
yes,
likelihood of it happening soon is very, very slim, though.
Well, I think it's closer than we
there's
think.
That whole exponential growth thing.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it.
Getting an artificial mind.
Moore's Law, dude. That's down the road. Moore's Law basically says we double our speed in technology every single year.
That's exponential growth.
It has every single year.
Yeah, it's like at the moment, I think it's projected 2029 is when we'll crack it, when we'll actually make
it. All you have to ask yourself is we have these massive data centers all around the world now, which have teraflops of processing power and exabytes of storage data and so much computer power under one roof, then they all effectively are just storage. But if you had an AI that could utilize that much raw processing power, imagine what could happen.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the thing. All they need to do is get control.
And once you have it, start making decisions that humans can
And I don't want anybody to think that I am a conspiracy theorist. Yeah.
And it's not like we're sitting here going like, you know, we're anti-robotics.
And I've got canned water and beans in the bunker out the back. None of that. All I think is I just look at all this stuff and I just go, we should probably be careful.
Yeah.
It's just about being careful. I'm a big tech guy. I say go ahead, develop.
Have you heard of this thing called the Matrix metaphysics hypothesis?
No.
Which is basically like that if artificial intelligence is going to extend the way it's going,
right?
Like if humanity itself has succeeded in making an artificial intelligence, means that we've literally created a simulation for these robots to live in. So therefore, it is potentially accurate that we ourselves live in a simulation because our previous creators, they were just artificial intelligence.
Yeah, of course. And the thing is, we could be in the Matrix right now. Yeah. We don't know.
And do you believe in an afterlife?
Do I believe personally in an afterlife? No.
No. So therefore, then the creator, we've just told the creator of our simulation that you don't believe in the afterlife. So he's going to put you in. He's going to delete you.
Or I'll see a black cat, and in that moment I see a black cat, I will be reprogrammed, and suddenly I become a born again. Where do you think the born agains come from?
Have you ever had a dream, Neo, where you could never wake up?
All right. That's the end of my cup of tea. I'm very depressed.
Ooh, the robots are coming.
So, you know, from the robot apocalypse, we then have to do something frivolous, like talk about movies.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got a knife. Make love in the hammock.
What? Yes, the section that became its own podcast and is now back to being a section again. Welcome to Film Actually.
Oh, don't you love hearing that? It's so good.
I love that theme. For those who don't know what that kind of means, of course, it's a classical piece of music, but that particular version of it comes from Amadeus. Mm. It's actually how the film opens. And I always just love that opening to Amadeus because it's this powerful piece of music, how it kicks in. I just love it. Anyway, so there you go. Beautiful. Film Actually, what are we talking about? Who cares?
Does that make me Salieri?
I don't know, but Mozart's...
I will never know McVeigh's genius.
I don't know, but Mozart's wife was a babe. I love that film.
It's a great movie.
Amadeus is a terrific film. I remember seeing it for the very first time. I went to the cinema. I knew of the play. I knew that it was about Salieri and Mozart. And I went to see the movie, and I was just enthralled by the movie. I was just being taken away by it. I loved it. And then it went intermission. And I went, are you kidding?
Really? Yeah.
It was so long.
I didn't know it had an intermission.
Yeah, it originally had an intermission. And I just went, oh God, how long is this movie? I thought we were at the end.
Yeah. You went out, had a break, came back. You're like, I'm done with this movie now.
Hey, to let you in on a little inside baseball, Clockwork Orange had an intermission.
Did it? I know 2001 had an intermission.
2001 had one. But I saw Clockwork Orange at the cinema in a revival house.
Yeah.
And they still had the original intermission in there. And it's like when it hit. A bit of inside goss. First time I saw Clockwork Orange, I hated it. Mm. Oh, wait a minute. I think I actually have something here for that. Oh God, where is it? I thought I had it. Oh no, do you know what? It's on the behind the panels soundboard. Anyway, I've got a sound clip that goes, hated it. I absolutely hated it the first time, and I actually left at that intermission.
Yeah,
because
right.
I couldn't stand it. It didn't help that I was with a girlfriend at the time. Oh, I'm glad that relationship's over. But I was with that relationship and she hated it too, and realistically, I guess that's probably part of the reason why I hated it was the fact that I was sitting next to her huffing and puffing the whole time.
Yeah.
But I did see it a second time. My friends all said, how dare you not like it? You need to see it again. We all win as a group, and I got the joke. I got, so to speak, I got the gag, which is that it's a parody.
Yeah, it's a satire.
And it's like once you understand what Kubrick is trying to say, the film is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Because of course, everybody going into Clockwork Orange goes, it's about ultraviolence. And you go, but it's really not that violent. No, it's not violent. Mm. It's about ultraviolence.
Yeah.
It's about a concept. Anyway, this is not the Clockwork Orange show. But one
we're
day...
We're going to have an intermission now. Get your snacks.
Everybody go to the lobby. Everybody go to the lobby. Oh dear, the things we remember from our past. All right, one day we are going to do a special. We're just going to talk Kubrick.
We have to, yeah.
We just sit down and really just nerd out over Kubrick. Yeah.
He's my god.
I think you and I could nerd out over Kubrick nicely because Kubrick is not my god, but he's one of my gods. I think there's a few of them. That I would follow, but Kubrick is, in my eyes anyway, a genius.
Yeah.
I don't think he's... The difference with... You know what the difference between me and a lot of fanboys are? I'm willing to accept when somebody makes a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
You there,
except for Kubrick, who never made one.
Well, I could debate. And I can look at it and go, I love Steven Spielberg, but Hook may not have been his finest moment, you know? And it's like, I loved early Brian De Palma.
Mm.
He later half of his career, not so good, but early Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
Not untouchable, you know? Untouchable.
Did you see what you did there?
Did you see what I did there?
Stop giving me those snake eyes.
Carry on.
It's a bit of an obsession of mine.
You almost didn't catch that one. We're carrying on like some sisters.
Obsession was a good film, though. That was a good film. Did you see that?
Yeah, I've seen most of his
John
films.
Lithgow playing the bad guy. That was wild. Yeah. All right,
this is becoming a blowout. We've got to move on.
Let's talk a little bit about what we've been watching. Every Kubrick film. No. What we've been watching this week. Do we have a theme for that? Do we have a move?
Your move, creep.
Tell me what you've been watching. Here.
Well, should we do...
Let's talk about the big news of this week.
Should we do the most awesome thing or should we do the
depends on what you consider as the most awesome thing. We don't rehearse this, people. Let's start with as it's ordered here because we're actually going to come back to this. Let's just give the headline. Mm-hmm. And the headline is, of course, Netflix launched in Australia this week. It launched on the 24th. I signed up on the 24th. Mm-hmm. For everybody out there, if you sign up now, you get 1 month free.
Yeah.
Just as a hint for you all, you're geeks, obviously, because you're listening to us, Daredevil, the series, comes out on the 10th. Yeah. So if you sign up anytime now, you'll actually be able to get Daredevil in that free period.
Entirely for free.
And then you can cancel it anytime if you don't like the service. We'll come back to Netflix in the film news because there's actually a couple of articles that have come up about Netflix, and it is worth talking about. What we want to talk about in the what we've been watching, though, is the fact that the quality is surprisingly good.
Yes.
I mean... Netflix has been doing this for a very long time. They've brought their technology here, and I've got it on the Apple TV.
Yeah.
I hit play, it plays. There's no lag.
I guess it's like, it's super clear based on what I saw, because I haven't signed up for it yet, but I got to play around on it for about an hour today with Dave, and it's very clear that this was very, very, very well thought out.
Mm.
This was not like, just like, let's just put it out in Australia or see
it's
what happens.
It's no YouTube, let's put it that way.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is like...
we're only going to release it when it's ready.
Yeah.
And this is very, very, it's ready.
Yeah, and
one of the
articles we're going to come back to and talk about is an interview with Reed Hastings, the man who actually created Netflix, and why it's taken so long to come to Australia and stuff like that. Mm. He's actually got reasons for it, and we'll come back to that. The most important thing is that we did talk about last week, there are 4 major streaming services in America. In Australia. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I've got a cold, right? Yeah, I've got a cold, yeah? Okay.
Excuse me. Bless
there goes my ear. Yeah, I don't know about the listeners.
Excuse me.
But
starting to catch something. I don't know from who.
Presto, Stan, QuickFlix, Netflix, and there's also Foxtel streaming as well. Mm-hmm. They've got their own stuff as well. All of these services popped up in the last couple of months because there was the word that Netflix was coming and everybody wanted a piece of the action. So the first thing we have to talk about is that, yes, it doesn't have all the same content as the American show. We've got more articles about that as well. But let's just remember that it's early days. Mm. It's only just hit the market and give it a chance.
Mm.
For a free month, nothing to lose at this point. That being said, what I did watch this week was on Netflix. And I started rewatching The IT Crowd.
Yep.
Which my son had never watched. And it has fast become his favorite show. And we have been laughing our asses off rewatching this in beautiful quality, mind you. And oh my God, that show is funny. And all I'm going to say to anybody who is out there who has seen it is, have you turned it off and on again?
It's the internet, Jen.
We actually haven't got to that episode yet.
Yeah, okay.
And
I'm
waiting for it because there's also a throwback to that. If you remember the series well, there's a throwback
which I do,
in the very last episode where she comes out, they're trying to stop that meme from happening. And she runs out and goes, we can stop
it. We have it.
And the reaction is, do you still have that? It's like, it's a very funny show. Yeah. And if you are at all interested, somebody just sent me a message. If you are
tinnitus.
If you're at all interested in technology or any of that sort of stuff, The IT Crowd is must watch.
Yeah.
This is geeks and nerds at their finest.
And it's an awesomely well written.
And Moss is an inspired character.
Richard Ayoade.
Yeah, he's an inspired character. Yeah, yeah. And of course, Chris O'Dowd is fantastic as well. Yeah. But let's not. I forget what her name is.
It's Jen. I can't remember the actress's name.
If only we had an interconnected group of computers to look this up on. But the actress who plays Jen is
phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
And the boss. I can't remember.
Barry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Jen, hello. Good to see you again.
And the the first boss as well.
Yeah, the first
boss is just
and it's the oh man, I'm really bad on names at the moment. From the Mighty Boosh, he's the goth guy that's in the annex.
Richmond.
Richmond, yeah.
Hello.
Richmond is genius.
That's such an easy watch, just quick watch too. It's only like six episodes a season.
It flies by. And one thing I love about Netflix is they encourage binge watching, of course. And so what you've got in Netflix is you watch the first episode, and as soon as it finishes, it splits into a 2-screen thing. It says next episode starting in 5, 4, 3. You don't even have to get out of your chair. You can just hook up the intravenous feed of coffee in one arm. You can get the Twinkies going in the other hand.
When I was watching the next gen, if I'd finished a disc and I'd want to watch the next one, it would be like, all right, get up,
change the disc,
and you have to take the slip case off.
Can I just say at this point,
you have to go through 5 trailers.
Can I just say at this point, first world problems.
Even in the third world, I have Netflix. This is going to be a problem for them too.
All right, so Dave, I believe you saw a movie this week.
I got hard. Which is not an original joke. It's said about 100 times throughout the movie. I saw Get Hard.
And why? That's the only question I want to say.
Admittingly, this movie did have some chuckles. I'd say maybe I laughed about like 5 or 6 times.
And you are a fan of Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I love Will Ferrell. And this is produced by Adam McKay as well, who's got a story credit.
Did he have a cold? Or
I don't know what happened here. This movie is basically like, to wrap it up in a nutshell, it's just Will Ferrell's really rich Wall Street guy. He gets framed for like embezzlement.
Right.
And he gets sentenced to jail. He's got 30 days to go to jail. So he's like, I need to get hard. I need to learn how to live in prison.
I know some magazines that'll do that for him.
And so he hires Kevin Hart, this poor...
Oh, wait a minute. He needs to get...
Yeah. Trust me, Dave. That joke stops getting funny after about 10 minutes. Yeah, no. Yeah, and so this whole movie is him have 30 days. He's got a train to go to jail.
Right.
Yeah, and so he gets help from Kevin Hart. Whereas I think originally this movie was perhaps the other way around. Because it's a really good concept if you think about it, if they reversed it. If Will Ferrell had played the really hardcore gangster who had to train this really rich, like, black dude who was the head of a corporation. And I think that would have been quite clever and quite funny, a nice comment. It's like that this rich black guy who runs Wall Street is being framed for embezzlement because he's black.
Right.
You know, and like then the only person is like the king of the hood who's white. You know, I don't know if that was the original idea or not, but if it had something as subversive as that, that's something Adam McKay would probably do.
Yeah, I can see that.
And they take it pretty far. In Anchorman 2, there's some pretty like heavy race stuff in that movie.
Adam McKay's
like
always pushed
the envelope. And I think Get Hard, like, just to, I don't want to talk about it forever, but it's not a great movie whatsoever.
It sounds like you got at least one more laugh than I did through Big Stan, though. So. And that's a step in the right direction.
Like it's got moments. It's got shades of like this an awesome idea going here, but it's kind of like stuck in this like it's not PG-13, but it might as well be if they didn't say fuck. Mm. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing to make it beyond the swearing, and it's like if there was some edge to it, this could have been quite good. And
right.
You get shades of it. Like you get scenes like where Will Ferrell is like complete ghetto gangster and he's immediately accepted in the hood and he trains like all these hardcore gangsters on how to run the stock market and they all become like millionaires overnight and it's got moments. Like
interestingly enough, there is actually a movie, it's not new territory, there's actually a movie that came out 10 years 15 years ago where a guy goes, he's a white collar criminal who ends up in jail but he's a genius at the stock market and basically ends up turning the whole group of jail people into like this stock market moguls and everything. Yeah. So it's not something that's new.
No.
We've tried this before.
And, the reason I went to see this movie is because like I avoid the trailers and everything, particularly for comedies.
Have we got a trailer for you today?
Oh, I can't wait. There are some, like, we should explain this a little bit. Like, there are some trailers that I do watch, like, that I don't care about. Like,
You've seen the movie, you'll watch the trailer.
Exactly. You know, once I've seen the movie, I'll watch the trailer. But some movies, the trailer comes out and I'll watch it because it doesn't bother me too much. But comedies, I'll really strictly avoid because they tend to blow all the jokes.
Yeah.
And sometimes all the punchlines.
It sounds like there weren't any jokes in this movie,
Yeah, there wasn't. There was. And, like, the kind of thing is, like, this movie really falls flat.
And had you watched the trailer, you might not have got to see the movie.
Yeah, because I got two things on, and then we can move on from Get Hard. We can get soft, I guess. I don't know. Like the first thing is that I really, really like Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart. I think they're both really, really talented. And the kind of thing is, like, in the movie, they're so talented and they're so funny. But they're trying so hard to make
the material
funny. And the kind of thing is you see them, like, really, they have amazing, amazing chemistry together. It's like an amazing pairing. It's like Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker kind of. It just works. But then by the third movie, it's like it's really not working without the material.
Mm.
And so, like, there's that level. And so the second thing is I went to watch it because I had a different idea of what
it
was.
So you mean chemistry like Tom Hanks and the dog?
Eternal Roots. Yeah, exactly. You know, like I mean, like the Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
like you really like the Blues Brothers is a really good example. Like you can see the chemistry that Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi have together, and then it's missing in the second one, Billy Crystal
and Gregory Hines in Running Scared,
yeah,
or Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd in
All
Trading
these
Places.
Buddy cop ones. Yeah, like even Midnight.
Midnight Run. Grodin and De Niro are fantastic.
You know, it's just like that magic pairing that just seems to work, even though it kind of really shouldn't. And but the second thing I just wanted to bring up about Get Hard was I had a completely different idea of what this movie was going into it. I thought it was going to be the comedy version of Shawshank Redemption. I thought he was going to get framed for murder at the beginning and be in jail, and
Big Stan.
Is that Big Stan?
No, not framed for murder. He's actually arrested. He's going to jail for being a con artist. But the entire plot of Big Stan, I keep bringing up Big Stan, in case you haven't gone back and listened to episode 3 or something like that, of the original Geek Action, it's that long ago.
Yeah.
This was the unfunniest comedy of all time. It sounds like a competition now. But basically, it is Rob Schneider directed it as well. So Rob Schneider directed and stars in it. And it's basically about a guy who does property conning. He cons old people out of money for properties, gets caught. He's going to go to jail. But his big concern is he's going to get anally raped. And so the entire film is all about how he doesn't want to be anally raped. You hear the word anally rape more times than any other phrase.
That's kind of like Get Hard. It's the same.
It's just going to continue all the way through it. And so he finds a sensei played by David Carradine who teaches him how to defend himself so he won't get anally raped.
David Carradine's in that movie.
Yeah. And then he goes to jail and, of course, he becomes the leader of everybody because he knows how to fight and everything to defend himself from being anally raped. That's the film.
Wow.
And you just sit there going, wow. And of course, the joke is he's Big Stan, but he's the shortest one in the jail. And it's just every obvious joke you could ever think of.
Get Hard's never obvious. It's just it's just flat. It's like it's trying too hard. Whereas if it just had relaxed, then it would have been quite funny.
Right. You know, are you going to watch Big Stan one? I'm going to get you.
You know
to
where
watch
Get
Big
Hard
Stan.
Really falls down is it's the plotting is so obvious. Yeah. It's just everything happens so generically and you know exactly how you think it's going to turn out. It turns out. Whereas if they just tried something extra, I wouldn't. Big Stan sounds hateable.
Oh, it is. It's hateable.
Like hateable. I can't hate Get Hard. I watched Get Hard with a mate of mine, and we were the only two people that sat there stone faced. It was packed, and everybody was laughing their ass off. Like it was God's gift to comedy. And it's kind of like that kind of makes you hate it more.
There's actually a scene.
I walked out of it just going, it's 3 stars. It's like I had some chuckles.
There's a scene in Big Stan where he gives his wife a giant dildo so that he can brace himself so he gets used to it. Being anally. The whole thing is about anal rape. It's just the most repulsive film.
See, whereas in Get Hard, they'll take it to massive extremes. It'll be like the kind of jokes in it will be funny on paper, but executed kind of poorly. It'll be stuff like keistering. What does that mean? And it's like you have to stick things up your ass in jail. And then later in the movie, it'll be like, grab this machete. And it's like a giant, giant machete. And it's like, I keistered it. You know, so it's like Kevin Hart drops the blade because it's like, where's it been?
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, it's not too obvious a joke. Like, cause
it's pretty obvious.
I know it's obvious, but it's not like that Big Stan one you just explained. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where the difference, I suppose. Like, Get Hard's kind of trying, but it's failing. Whereas Big Stan just seems
Big Stan's
like
really trying.
It's not trying. You know?
It's really trying. Yeah. Let me tell you. I would watch Big Stan with you again, but it would actually require me to run from the room screaming. So I don't know if I could ever watch it with you.
Let's run from this section screaming.
Okay, so last week we said that we were going to cover Star Trek season by season.
Yes.
So things that we're covering season 2 on also the second movie, we've changed the theme up a little bit this time. So this time we're going to go with James Horner. Okay, so here we go. Oh, I do love that theme.
That is amazing.
I love James Horner's theme. I really do. And I love Jerry Goldsmith as well. But for me, this was like the rebirth of Star Trek when this film came out. So for me, this was like a big thing. So, Dave,
Should we start with the next gen? Or?
Yeah, we'll start with next gen. So what did you think of season 2 when it came out?
Let's just say Pulaski.
Yeah.
That's the big one, isn't it?
And without any explanation either. First episode comes out and you go, who the hell's that? And where's Crusher?
She looks like McCoy.
And calling Data Data.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't mind Pulaski, though, to be fair.
I got used to her.
Yeah, that's right.
And I got used to the fact that she was tough as nails. And
I never missed her, though.
No, and when she went away, it was like, okay, we're on. We move on, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I never missed her when she went, but I did get used to her, but I think overall, what was your feeling of the season?
It improved.
Really?
I think it improved towards the end of it, though.
Even 50 Shades of Grey? No, what was it called? Ooh. Shades of Grey?
Well, the kind of thing is, like, I'm one of those people that really disliked Tasha Yar.
Oh, yeah, no.
And
I think that's every trend.
Yeah, what's her name again? Denise Crosby. Really disliked that character. And this is also the season where Riker shaves the beard.
Yeah.
And,
No. This is the season. Riker didn't have a beard in the first season. He got the
oh,
beard.
Oh, no, that's what I meant to say. Sorry, where he gets the beard. Where they start finding the characters a bit more. And I know a lot of people.
Worf changed his hairstyle.
A lot of people seem to think that season 2 is worse than season 1. And I don't sit on there. I think it's moving towards...
My overall feeling on season two was I thought that it was an improvement on season one in some senses.
I mean, you've got the episode Measure of a Man in season
two. And there were some exceptional episodes. But overall, the season suffered really, really heavily from the writer's strike.
Yes, yeah. And it's a shorter season, too.
It's a very short season. It has quite possibly the worst episode of Star Trek ever
history.
That's
right, the clip show.
Which was Shades of Grey, which is the very last episode of the season. It's almost like they ran out of material, and they just said, what can we do? Let's put Riker in a coma and then have him flashback over his life, which just happens to be season one and two.
That's right. He sees Data in the holodeck. And
it was awful. It was awful. And you just sit there and go, boy, Star Trek is well and truly above this. Yeah. What the hell are they doing? That being said, as you said, they have some exceptional episodes in there. A lot of those episodes were actually original series episodes reworked.
Reworked, yeah.
So they had some great writers in there that they original stories that they had in there that they had to rework. And overall, it's not an abortion of a season.
No.
I
don't even think season one's an abortion of
season. No, I don't either. I think every season has something to say.
I think in terms of absolute
theory, there's never a bad
Yeah, and I prescribe to that theory now.
There's never a bad Trek.
I think because like the way that I watched them was like I had kind of prior knowledge that it was going to really improve, and so I kind of was more fair to it.
I can't wait to talk next week.
Oh,
season three season three, baby.
Right.
That's next week.
We should do 3 and 4 together.
No, there's enough. There's enough in 3 alone.
Yeah. I feel like I should have looked up episode titles.
No, don't worry about it. We're not going to get that specific.
Yeah, we won't get that specific. But I think overall, like season one and two, maybe are about the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think season two just removes some things.
I think it clarified itself a little bit.
Yeah, it just starts to focus. And then you don't really know what it's focusing in on when you're watching it. You're just kind of knowing that it's getting better. But once
Season two also brought us the Borg.
Well, yeah.
Which is a great episode as well. And Guinan and stabbing Guinan stabbing Q with a fork.
Yeah, that's right. Is Guinan in two as early as two?
She starts in season two.
Yeah, right. Damn.
She's in that Borg episode. Remember, she stabs Q.
Ages ago now that I watched.
She stabs Q with a fork, and I just love that.
Yeah, and but I don't think.
And you've also got the great line with Lieutenant Worf eating any books, any good books lately.
You see, like Worf's a perfect example. Like Worf begins to come out of the background.
Well, I was just saying, his hair is slightly changed.
Yeah,
they've given him more to do. They introduced prune juice,
and the cinematography changes up. Like it just improves.
There wasn't so much of what they termed in the making of it. They termed it as Hell Planet.
Just the stage.
The stage with the colored background, which looks very original series.
Yep.
They gave it a little bit more location work and stuff like that. So yeah, you're right. They obviously improved the budget.
Yeah, and they start relaxing a bit more on like, can we see this race this week and. They stop giving attention to the Ferengi, and like all these problems.
The Ferengi.
Because the Ferengi, I'm loving the Ferengi at the moment.
We should state you've started watching DS9.
Yes, I'm about episode 14 of the first season. So yeah.
And
just
Quark has
it.
Just immediately turned you around on
the Ferengi. Yeah, on the Ferengi. And Nog.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I just watched a great episode today before I came here where it was Nog and Jake, this pretty Bajoran queen came to the
I know this episode.
Deep Space Nine, and the two boys were obsessed with her, and they really wanted to get to know her. But at the same time, she was dealing with a crisis with the not captain, but we got a what's the other
Commander
Sisko. And so it was, and also at the same time, you have Miles O'Brien down on Bajor becoming like the high priest of Bajor, and there's this godlike, cloud-like being that comes, and the only way to stop it is for this one high priest to bring all the people together.
Oh, the storyteller, that
episode's
called.
Yeah,
the storyteller.
It's called the storyteller, yes. And absolutely wonderful episode, I think, and it's overall, I'm loving Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine is a great show, and I'm going to say right now, I know we have absolutely no clout in the world whatsoever. I'm going to say Paramount, release DS9
on
Blu-ray.
The fuck up.
Yeah, we need DS9 on Blu-ray. Please.
And I'll tie it into Next Gen too, because I'm feeling the same way I am feeling about the Next Gen as I was,
DS9.
Yeah. And because DS9, I'm sitting here watching, I'm loving this, but I'm being told that it gets exponentially better.
Yes.
Like around the third season, which is the same kind of
From season two, last episode of season two onwards,
Yeah.
Boom.
And this is exactly how I feel about The Next Generation. Yeah. It's like when I watched season one, I was kind of like, this is really good. Like, what's the problem here? But then when you get to season three of The Next Gen, and this is what we were saying before of just like, it's hard to know what the problems are, but you can feel something off.
Yeah.
But then when you look back on it, it's so very evident.
And what's really interesting about DS9 is that DS9 didn't have a shakier start as Next Gen because it already had 5 or 6 seasons of Next Gen to draw on.
Totally.
So it starts strong, but it manages to up the ante and kick yourself into the next gear.
Yeah, I don't think last week we talked about DS9 at all.
No, because I don't think you'd only just started. Or I just hadn't started. You just bought it.
Yeah.
Boy, you got that far already. That's amazing. Yeah. I know there was.
I tend to watch about 2 a day, and then
there was a tweet from our friend John D.
Yes.
Who basically said, "You've got a lot to look forward to."
Yeah, yeah, and I envy myself. I'm really enjoying it.
And who was that? Was it Matt White who actually said, or Snake Oz, who actually said they're envious of the fact? No, it was John.
No, it was John.
Who actually said he was envious of the fact that you're getting to see this for the first time.
And I said, I'm envious of myself.
John D, for those who don't know, actually is on a Trek podcast. So he's right. Very well versed in Trek.
Yeah,
so,
awesome.
And so, he's very envious of you being able to see this first. So am I in many ways.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's like, there's nothing I can compare it to. I just want to stay in that universe forever. I don't really want to leave it.
That's fair. Well, you've got a long way to go before.
I know. But it's so colorful and interesting, and the writing is just amazing. And that's what's interesting as well is because in today's world, it's like maybe people look back at The Next Gen and they look at Deep Space Nine, and they go, "Oh, it's poor writing." But if you compare that writing to today's kind
of
shit,
see, I actually disagree. I think some of Star Trek is some of the finest written television ever.
Exactly. Like it still holds up today on a writing level as just excellent.
So some of the story ideas are genius.
Yeah.
Measure of a Man is genius. Mm. And there's an episode in season, is it season 2 or season 3? The Drumhead, where they have the kangaroo court. No, it is. It's season 2.
Yeah. And that's with the Admiral out to get Picard, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and basically turning everybody against everybody and finding ways to manipulate it.
That's an amazing episode.
That is such a good episode. Yeah. And you sit there and go, that's when Trek is at its finest, you know, when they get into that real nitty gritty. Yeah, you can have space battles there, but Trek is always about the characters.
And then is it I-Borg? Is that the name of the episode, the first Borg?
No,
that's later. That's with
I-Borg
Hugh.
Is
that's
Hugh.
Later.
No, this was, John D, where are you?
Yeah, where are you?
That episode doesn't have Borg in the title.
It's with Q.
It's Q, and it's always Q title. Q episodes are always called Q something. Is it Q who? Or
maybe it is Q who.
No, I don't think it's cute. I'm gonna look it up.
I'll go grab you a Blu-ray.
I'm gonna look it up. It's right here. We got an interconnected group of computers. We can figure this out. Let's have a look. Keep talking. Tell me a little bit about from the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You also watched some movies, of course. So, and we played the theme. So, Star Trek II.
Ah, the Wrath of Khan.
Leave my crew alone.
I guess it's kind of like repeating what's been said before, but it's true. It is the best Star Trek movie.
Absolutely.
Out of all of them. I had seen The Wrath of Khan before. Mm. I'd watched it before seeing Abrams Into Darkness.
You have and always shall be my friend.
Live long and prosper. But it's a perfect movie, really.
It is.
Like from beginning to end, not just because it's Star Trek, although that is a plus, but just because it's extremely well done. From the soundtrack to the space battles, even little things like, like Khan and Kirk never come face to face.
It's Q-Who. How good are we?
Q-Who, yeah. Okay, awesome. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, Q sends them way into the future.
No, wait, not so much the future. He sends them to a different quadrant of space.
Oh, right.
He sends them to the Delta Quadrant long before they're ever supposed to get there.
Yeah.
Which actually alerts the Borg to the presence of man.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Back to Star Trek 2.
But yeah, like I'm in agreement with you, Dave. Like you go from the, especially when you go from the motion picture into the Wrath of Khan, and you start getting all of the, because it's interesting because like the Next Generation is more like the original series than the Wrath of Khan is like the original series.
Yeah, Wrath. Well, a lot of people say that Nicholas Meyer reinvented Star Trek.
Yeah,
Nicholas Meyer and Harve Bennett basically came along and turned Star Trek into something that was more action packed. I mean, let's face it, you get stuff like this.
Yeah.
I I could listen to James Horner all day long, dude. Yeah.
And some days we have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, of course, Khan's theme. That's actually the battle sequence in that film. And, I mean, the whole tone changes from motion picture to Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, and universally, I think every person who loved Trek kind of went, that's the Star Trek movie we wanted to see.
Absolutely.
We wanted to see that whole interaction of the crew. Mm. We introduced Savick as a character, who, Kirstie Alley in the first one, who was just fantastic and added the humor. Things like, did she change her hair?
I hadn't noticed.
You know? He's so human.
And
of course, it was the film that was only agreed upon by Leonard Nimoy to be in if he could be killed.
Yes.
Basically, that was the agreement. He said, I will do another Star Trek movie if you kill the character off, because he didn't want to do it anymore. He was done.
Yeah.
But he obviously, everybody had such a good time on that film that they wrote themselves an out. If this was successful, they wrote an out. Mm. And it was such a subtle out that if they had never come back to it, it's fine.
Yeah.
But they came back, and of course, Leonard Nimoy at that point rediscovered
his love of Trek.
Mm. Everybody rediscovered that this is what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just a joyful film. You watch it and you just go, everybody is obviously having such a good time making this film.
And everyone gets their due in it, you know, which is really interesting. Like, and also the connections, because the way that I watched it was I watched the Space Seed episode right before, just to, you know, get
which
back
which actually
in the
is
it.
Bad because there's continuity.
Yes,
issues
there is. In particular, there's the whole Chekhov, like, you know, like Khan saying to Chekhov, I never forget a face.
Yeah.
And you're like,
he wasn't in the
episode. You weren't in the episode.
in fact, Chekhov wasn't in the
cast yet. You weren't in the series. Yeah,
he wasn't in the cast yet. But I guess if you think about
that's kind of a nod to it in a way.
But also, it is also. Is working again, I guess, on the theory that the Enterprise has a crew, or the Enterprise in the original series had a crew of 300 and something people. They're in deep space on a 5-year mission, which means they're not going to pick up anybody new.
Yeah.
So Chekhov was obviously on that ship.
Mm.
He just wasn't on the bridge
yet. He just
wasn't
on board.
So you could argue that you could argue that he'd obviously by second season been promoted to that character. But at the same time, he never met Khan.
No.
We know because we saw the episode.
No, I love Khan.
And Ricardo Montalban. Come on.
Something that kind of like that Khan gets really well that a lot of the most of the movies actually don't get really well is that the Enterprise is a character itself.
Yes.
And I mean, the original movies, the original cast, we got to be fair as well, is that the Enterprise gets destroyed in the third one and
it's absent
from the fourth one.
So it's the death in the family, whereas in this one it's Nimoy.
Yeah.
It's Spock. Yeah. And in the next one it is the Enterprise. The
but
Enterprise
so
dies.
Much takes place on board the Enterprise.
Yes.
You know, like a huge amount. And the whole thing gets the focus.
Well, let's not forget there's that scene in Star Trek the Motion Picture where he goes up and sees the Enterprise for the first time in many years. Whoa, that's a gavel. And then goes, you know, and then Scotty pats him on the back, you know, as he's approaching. Yeah. Why did I hit a gavel first?
And this is not to make it out like stuff like Star Trek 5 and Star Trek 6 don't have Enterprise scenes. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, they do. But in Wrath of Khan, it's brilliant because you get Khan's ship.
Yes.
And the Enterprise, and that's the scheme of the movie, essentially.
And what
like
I love is
that's the whole movie.
And the structure of the show is the second half of that film is effectively a submarine naval battle between these two people out trying to outmaneuver each other, which is just genius.
Yeah.
You know, and then you throw into it the Genesis project and you throw into it the hook of Kirk's son and the idea that there was this past relationship. Mm. And there's so much in there.
Yeah.
It's a great film and well worth having a look at. And I would say to you, if you are absolutely new to Trek, absolutely new, you've never seen any Trek and you want to jump into Trek, Star Trek 2 is where you start in.
Yeah.
That's where you kick in.
I'd say if you got balls of steel, do the motion picture.
No, because do you know why? If you are absolutely new to Trek, you're going to watch the motion picture and go, I'm out.
Yeah, I don't know about that because that's...
if you've never experienced Trek, you're going to go, this is boring.
Yeah,
because not a lot actually happens unless you are really looking for a philosophical.
That's true.
Reflection.
If you're looking for a real science
if you're looking
fiction.
For a philosophical reflection, fine. But if you're a Star Wars generation, you're going to need Wrath of Khan.
I would say First Contact.
First Contact's good.
I'd say jump into First Contact.
Do you know why I don't say First Contact? Because I think once you've gone to the new crew, it's really hard to go back to the old crew.
That's kind of true.
Go to the old crew first, then move into the new crew. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah,
but
I would agree with you. Let's say we're going to limit it to the original series crew.
Yep.
Then I'd say Rathacon.
Rathacon, yeah. Absolutely. I'd say watch Rathacon.
At least it's the best one.
Rathacon, anyway. Search for Spock, Voyage Home, that trilogy.
Yes.
That's your introduction to into Star Trek. And from there, you can go anywhere you want. Yeah. We're an hour and 10 minutes and we've still got a lot of material. So I think we're going to move out of what we've been watching and actually have a little bit of look at news. And there is so much goddamn news this week that we're going to have to abbreviate a little bit, okay? Yep. Because I think some of these are going to be bigger talking points than others. So, first thing we're going to do is we're actually going to have a look at Netflix, as we said before. We're going to come back to that. We're not going to do that trick of saying we're going to come back to something and then come back 3 weeks later. So, Netflix did hit. And the first thing that happened when Netflix hit was everybody jumped up and down and said, all this stuff's not on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's like, dudes, you know, you just...
What do you want? Do you want everything on Netflix?
I think we need to, at this point, address a very salient point, which is Netflix in America has different licensing agreements with the studios than Australian Netflix does. Australian Netflix still has to follow the same licensing agreements and they still have to re-license everything because different rights holders hold that stuff here. And we always knew this was going to be the case. Anybody who thought when Netflix opened here was going to have all the contents of the American store has not been paying attention. Netflix has opened in Canada and Netflix opened in England and each store had different content because there are different rights holders. Mm. Okay. So we have got, for what we got, Netflix opened strong. It opened with a lot of stuff. There's an article on Gizmodo that basically immediately jumped on it and said, 20 geeky shows, none of them available on Netflix. Like, then, there. Well, let's have a look at these shows and say Parks and Recreation, The Office, the U.S. version of The Office, Bob's Burgers, Archer, Family Guy, 30 Rock, Dexter, Weeds, Portlandia, The Following, X-Files, Cosmos, Hawaii Five-O, Revolution, Dollhouse, The 4400. Who wants The 4400? Jesus. Alphas, Sliders, Xena Warrior Princess, and Caprica, all not showing up. Now, let's just address a few of these, and you'll get the idea. We don't need to go one by one. But if we look at it just on a few of these, we can say that Weeds didn't show up. Weeds is actually owned by Showtime. Showtime has a contract with Foxtel and Showcase, so we don't have the rights to it for them to have it. The Office US is actually owned by one of our networks. It was shown on network television here and is probably openly available on Presto or Stan.
They probably still haven't aired season 8 or 9 yet.
That's possible too. Dollhouse, no, not Dollhouse, that's not the one I want to mention. What is it? X-Files is actually 20th Century Fox, as is Buffy, which is another one that people have actually complained about. But Buffy and X-Files are owned by 20th Century Fox. Who owns Foxtel? 20th Century Fox. It's got a good stake in Foxtel. So I would imagine that those shows are probably licensed to Fox 8, which is where they actually currently are showing in ad nauseum repeat. So you get the idea. This stuff is actually licensed. Archer is actually showing on the Comedy Channel on Foxtel. Parks and Recreation, I think, is actually on Foxtel at the moment. So when you start breaking this down, you start looking at it and going, this stuff is already licensed to other vendors.
Yeah.
As licenses come up, Netflix will obviously pick up licenses and these shows will start to come. It's only been running for 4 days.
Yeah, exactly.
Give it a chance.
Do you reckon if there was a headline saying everything ever is going to be on Netflix, like, would it make too much of a difference?
People would still find somehow to complain. No, do you know what would happen then? They would actually complain. They'd say, but I already subscribed to Stan.
Oh, yeah. Or they'd say something stupid like, you know, it's too much content.
Yeah, or too much content. I love that argument. Anyway, so the bottom line is I'm going to defend Netflix in this case, and I'm going to say the other thing that Australians need to realize is that if you're not paying attention, Netflix doesn't hold everything forever. Mm. It comes onto streaming and drops off streaming. Just because it's not there now doesn't mean in 3 weeks it won't be. Yeah. So just keep your eyes open. In fact, there are websites dedicated to this in America because it's been going for so long, which actually says what's streaming on Netflix. And it actually gives you lists of dates for the dates
Even though there's like a lot of stuff is missing, they've got a surprising amount of content on there.
Yeah.
I initially thought it would be much smaller than what they actually put out. So I'm not going to complain.
No, I'm actually very impressed.
There's a lot of content on
there. And they give you one month free.
Yes.
Jump on, have a look, see what's there. You know,
I was saying before, like before we recorded, like I can't justify not getting it.
Not for really? At least the first month.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
And $11.99 a month, there's more content than you will ever watch in a month. Mm. All right. So now the other article we want to talk about this was Reed Hastings, who is the CEO of Netflix, actually talked about the launch in Australia. And somebody asked him why it's taken so long to get out here. And his answer was the NBN. Mm. Basically, he said that the infrastructure here wasn't fast enough and they were waiting for faster connection speeds to get here. And he is a big component. He is actually a big fan of the idea of charging for speed rather than data. He thinks the whole idea of data caps is ridiculous. And when you subscribe to an internet service, should be about the speed that you actually require rather than the amount of data. He said that Netflix, the presence of Netflix in countries has changed things. Mm. So when he first opened Netflix in Canada, they had draconian data caps, he said, and that has all changed over time, because as soon as the habits of the people were using, let's remember, in the US, I think Netflix accounts for like 75% of data.
Yeah, like an enormous amount.
Moving around America, it is huge. So now that Netflix is here, I think you're going to see a fundamental shift in the way that ISPs do business. Absolutely, because suddenly we're going to see huge amounts of data change.
When do you think, do you think maybe by next week's episode we'll have gotten figures?
I don't know. We'll keep track of it, though.
That'd be interesting.
We'll keep track of it. Delta Knight, if you're listening, keep track of that for us. This is a really interesting interview with him. Do have a listen.
I read this whole piece, actually. This is a great write-up.
I won't go through the whole thing now because we are running a little bit long, but it is a great write-up. He's a really neat-sounding guy who has a really good idea about things. And let's face it, Netflix is here to stay, guys, because even with all the other streaming services, Netflix US could subsidize Australian Netflix for years to come before they're going to give up the ghost on this. So just keep an eye on this. This is pretty good. This is pretty intense stuff. But more importantly than Reed Hastings, more importantly than Netflix, dude, Mallrats 2 moving at the speed of light, dude. It is like, first news we have is, I'm thinking about doing Mallrats 2. And then basically the cast members are coming out of the goddamn woodwork.
Yeah.
All the photos are showing up on Twitter with people holding two fingers up, basically saying, I'm on board. So we've actually got Ethan Suplee in front of a sailboat holding his fingers up. We've actually got...
Hey, he's in.
We've actually got...
I didn't know that.
We've actually got Jeremy London saying that he's in, no problem. We had Shannon Doherty on their podcast actually coming up on stage and saying that she's
on Babylon.
On Hollywood Babylon.
We got to say, we're massive Kevin Smith fans.
Oh,
here,
absolutely right? Massive Kevin Smith. How about this
one? Yeah, with the chocolate-covered pretzel.
Yes, Jason Lee put a post up which actually has him holding a chocolate-covered pretzel, holding up his finger saying two. He's in.
That's amazing.
So he's in. There's Shannon Doherty.
And Michael Rooker and Stan Lee.
Michael Rooker, and of course...
Of course, Jason Mewes.
Jason Mewes is in. There's no doubt about it. Mewes. Now, what they were actually saying, was Claire Forlani has not committed yet. So we haven't heard from her. We also haven't heard from some of the more obvious ones, which are his ex-girlfriend.
Joey Lauren Adams.
And we also haven't heard from Ben Affleck. Now, Ben Affleck, we talked about this before the show.
Yeah.
We were basically saying...
Oh, you know, they should bring back that kid that was playing on the escalator.
Yeah!
Oh, and they got to bring Walt and... Brian back.
The thing is,
tell him Steve Dave.
And hopefully we'll get Dante in there again, but he wasn't Dante.
Oh, yeah, no, he was another Hicks. He was a relative of
Hicks. He was a relative on the show. Yeah. So hopefully we're going to get everybody back. This is going
to
be a lot of fun.
And Scott Mosier to play the assistant.
Yes, that's right. Hopefully Scott Mosier's still got the beard.
Yes, Mistress Fenning. I've seen Mallrats maybe like 50 times in my life.
This is going to be
an enormous amount. I'm one of those guys.
This is going to be very interesting because it's also about trying to figure out what their story is going to be.
He's had the idea for eight. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. Like, from going way back. Like, I saw this when I was 13 for the first time, and he's had the idea for Die Hard in the Mallrats. I think when they were working on Mallrats, they had the idea for the sequel would be Die Hard in the Mall.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's still going to be the same thing.
Well,
that
might be, because that's what the producer was really keen on.
Yeah, that's what it really was.
For the background, for those who don't listen to Kevin Smith podcasts.
Because I remember once he was going to do it as a comic book too.
Yeah.
He'd always planned a comic book. So I'm assuming that this is what he's been sitting on for a while. Or maybe it's changed.
According to the one of his podcasts on his network, Kevin Smith actually talked about the fact that that producer who produced Mallrats was always very keen on the sequels, very keen on the ideas, was a big champion of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he recently died.
Yeah,
and it never got made, of course. And so Kevin Smith is really doing this as an homage to that producer.
Totally.
And he's basically saying that this is his way of honoring the memory of that man. Because he said that that man, that producer, was the man that really jettisoned him into the limelight, put him into the limelight. Because other than that, he was just a little indie filmmaker. Yeah. Mallrats was his first commercial film in a studio environment. And he protected him and everything else. So this is actually... This Mallrats is an homage to...
What's kind of interesting, though, is that...
That producer, which I cannot remember his name for the life of me.
It's Jim Jax.
Thank you. I'm dancing around it because I can't remember his name.
No, what I think is interesting is because you kind of get bits and pieces of a sequel in the other films.
Mm.
You know, you get like in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back in particular, you get Brody, he's running a comic book store. Like at the end of Mallrats, it's like Brody's he's the new host of the Tonight Show. And what's her name in the movie? I can't remember. Shannon Doherty's character's playing drums in the band. So you get that kind of information from those two characters anyway.
But we're now talking 25 years later. So,
that's true, yeah.
You know, it's like, where are they now? Mm. You know, and this is what this film is going to answer, I guess. But look, we won't harp on it too much, but goddamn Mallrats 2. And when they first talked about it, I thought, okay, he's got so many films on the slate right now that this is going to be years down the track. Yeah. This is moving at the speed of light.
Supposedly it's filming in December.
Wow.
Yeah, like he said that he's got... Clerks 2 coming up in June,
right?
Which he shoots in Philadelphia. Then he's doing Hit Somebody, which is like 2 months in Canada. And then he's right into this, supposedly. The one he was going to do, Moose Jaws.
Yep.
But that's been switched over to next year.
Well, Moose Jaws is going to be an interesting one because if Yoga Hosers doesn't perform, that'll be two in a row that don't perform. Moose Jaws may not happen.
He doesn't need them to perform anyway. No. They're so super cheap, they make their money back before they're even released.
All right, so from Mallrats 2 to Steven Spielberg, we're going to kick through these pretty fast here because we've got to get to the film review. Mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg has confirmed that he's actually doing Ready Player One,
the book.
And I'm all for this. I mean, anytime Steven Spielberg takes on genre work, I'm well excited. You can read more about that on the article from firstshowing.net, which we have on the website. And we then go...
I'm just going to be quick on this. People should really go out and read this book.
Okay.
Yeah, I've read this book, and it's an amazing book, and it's not every day your favorite director gets to make a book you really
like. But now I don't want to read the book because I don't want the film to be spoiled.
Actually, that's true. That's
because I really want to see the Spielberg
film. Let's see, if Spielberg drops out of this, then read it.
Okay, cool. That sounds like a plan. Now we're going to go through this rapid fire because we have three stories in a row that are all just first looks. So if you have if you are at all interested in seeing these first looks, head over to geekactually.com, look at the show notes. First up, Fantastic Four released an international banner which actually showed us The Thing finally. So we actually finally saw what The Thing looks like, and he just looks like a piece of melted rock.
He looks like Bane with the mask on.
Yeah, okay, a little
bit.
Can
you see it now,
Yeah,
Dave?
I can see it a little bit.
The mouth
I can see
it. It's very much like Bane's mouthpiece.
He's a little bit too molten for
me. Who's this guy in the photo at the bottom, though? The shrinking man.
I have no idea, but it's obviously his Instagram.
Yeah. he's not part of the poster?
I don't think he's part of the poster. He's the new Adam.
There's a guy on fire in this poster as well.
Yeah. You know what? He wasn't what everybody wanted to see, what people wanted to see. And that's a really feeble look at fire. Because you know how how the Human Torch turns into fire, his whole body kind of lights up? He just looks like they photoshopped fire on top of him. You know, it's like...
It's kind of lazy.
It is kind of lazy. Yeah. She's hot, though.
Yeah. Oh, Kate Mara's gorgeous.
Yeah. I'm saying...
She's going to be invisible half the time.
That's true. I still think Mr. Fantastic looks too young.
He looks like the guy from Whiplash.
He looks kind of
Why would they cast him
He kind of looks Mr. like... Fantastic. He kind of looks like Mr. Fantastic Jr. is what he looks... It's Franklin! Anyway, moving past that, we also got a first look this week at Jesse Eisenberg.
This is my favorite story of the week. My all-time favorite story.
So Jesse Eisenberg was the photo of bald Jesse Eisenberg was released as the first look at Lex Luthor, and it's there. And basically, Zack Snyder said, "This is not like any any Lex Luthor you've ever seen before. He's a mastermind, and he's complex, and he's that. And basically,
and he's a captain of industry. And he's got,
and everything that he says, you sit and go, that's exactly like every Lex I've ever seen.
But Dave, Jesse Eisenberg, he's bald.
Basically, what it is Mark Zuckerberg shaved his head, and now he's going to try and take over the world. Okay.
The thing I love about this in particular is how the internet's responded.
Yes.
Like it's like everything they've put up about this movie. It's just negative, 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 negative. And then they shave this curly head dude's head, and they're like, "Oh my god, he's exactly Lex Luthor." It's like, you know what? Fuck you. Seriously. You know, like if this is what's getting you excited about a Batman versus Superman movie. I don't care. Just fuck off.
Can
seriously.
I also stress for the record here that I never actually realized that Jesse Eisenberg has a pointy head?
It's like, of course Lex Luthor was going to be bald. Did you think for a second
that he wasn't?
Like, what would that have said? Would you have gone, oh, he's got hair? You know, oh, God, it irritates me. Someone who's wasted their
life. If there was ever a character note for a character, it is Lex Luthor, bald millionaire.
Yeah, it's like, whenever I hear stuff like this, I feel like I've wasted my life. You know, like why have I read these characters? And why do I think they're so deep? When their defining features are, they're bold.
Yeah.
Oh my god. It's like, fuck you. These are the same people that like they only go to see movies that played at Sundance or Cannes, and then they're like, oh, Jesse Eisenberg is Luthor. That's enough. I'm in. You know, it's like. Yeah.
Look, every time they release an image for this film, I'm getting less and less excited about this film.
It's just only because they love indie films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The film that I am getting more and more excited about has got to be Deadpool. Because they're doing all the right things at the moment. Yeah. And this is Ryan Reynolds.
Actually, before we move on, really, I know we're going over long, but I just want to say really quickly, I'm super excited for Jesse Eisenberg to play Luthor.
I'm curious to see it.
I don't want to be like I'm like negative on that. I'm not. I'm totally 100% down. I think it's going to rock. Yeah. I think he's going to be great in it. But I have a lot of problems with people getting excited now. You know,
fair enough.
Whereas it's like, it's Batman fighting Superman, people, please.
Yeah, you know? Fair enough. I do say that when Ryan Reynolds tweeted out this picture of him basically mimicking the Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds pose,
but in his full Deadpool costume, I went, oh my God, that is awesome.
The costume is unreal.
It is dead on.
Yeah.
I don't think I have seen a costume from Marvel films and everything. I don't think I have seen a costume that is so picture perfect to the comic book in a long time.
Yeah. It almost looks unreal, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It looks like a CGI.
It is genius.
Yeah. Your mind is like, this is the new Uncanny Valley. Yeah. It's like where the costumes are just accurate. You know, so you're like, that's not real. No. That's a Photoshop. You know?
In all the Marvel films, they take these liberties, they make them more realistic. Yeah. They kind of add armor to it, whatever. And you go, great, that looks fantastic. Mm. Because of course you couldn't do the comic book costume on screen.
Totally.
Because that wouldn't work. Mm. Well, actually.
Hello.
And this is the Deadpool that everybody wanted.
As we like to say, Deadpool.
So I'm getting more and more excited about this film by the day.
Speaking of dead.
Oh, that's terrible segue. In fact, I shouldn't have put these two articles next to each other.
You really shouldn't have.
This article is very
interesting. He's also
what? What?
Never mind. There's another connection between these two articles, which is in poor taste, which is that they're both completely accurate. They're both essentially copies of an original.
Well, that's true. That's one way of looking at it. Okay, so
I didn't want to bury the lead.
Yeah, basically, this article is talking about Furious 7, or in Australia, Fast and Furious 7, because obviously Australians are not intelligent enough to know that Furious 7 would be the sequel.
Really doing that again?
Yeah, it's called Fast and Furious 7.
They did
7.
It last time.
Yep, they've done it with all of them. Fast 5 was called Fast and Furious 5.
This is a Universal thing, I swear.
Yeah, Universal's changing. They changed the name on all of them.
American Pie, remember?
American Wedding.
It was called American Wedding, American Reunion. And it's like, what's that?
And here they went, American Pie, The Wedding, American Pie, The Reunion. It's crazy. But anyway, with Furious 7 coming out,
they wouldn't be like, I didn't see Furious 1 to 6.
There was a lot of talk about how they were going to finish this film with Paul Walker. He had filmed, as far as I'm aware, about three quarters of the film, and there was still about a quarter of this film to go. And there was a lot of talk whether it was going to be a CG Paul Walker, whether it was going to be a stand-in, and
his
so forth.
His twin brother.
Yeah. Well, they've now come out in this article, and I'll let you read the article for yourselves, but it's really interesting, because apparently what they've done is they've gone to outtakes and takes that didn't make it into previous films, and they have crafted a performance out of all of the old footage of him and inserted it using digital trickery. So it's not actually a CG Paul Walker, but he's been CG'd in to the scenes. This is clever stuff. And the problem is that now we know this, we're going to be watching the film like,
totally.
Does that look real? Is that real? Is that a composite?
And we're all going to... That scene from The Simpsons where they do Radioactive Man the movie? It's like, we've managed to complete the film using previously existing footage.
Well, and now here we have it, right?
So it's like, you're fired. Understandably so.
So I'm very curious to see.
I'm more excited to see how they write him out of the movie.
Oh, I just realized that one of our pages didn't load, I'm going to try and bring that up in a second. But that's all right. We'll do that while we're talking about other things. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be very. Yeah, don't look at that.
I had a glimpse.
Very quickly, rapid fire style. We can also say there's a couple of casting bits that we heard this week, which is Idris Elba is in talks for a villain role for the Star Trek 3, and Ben Mendelsohn, who is Australia's Ben Mendelsohn, is possibly in talks for a lead role in Star Wars Rogue One. So this is just some other bits and pieces of information that we have heard.
Both very cool.
This week, and both very cool. So what we're going to do now is we're going to move into our film review. And this week, we went to see Cinderella.
Yes,
and let me just say that this started with me saying to some workmates, Dave and I are going to go see Cinderella. and my workmate followed that with, isn't that cute?
It was very cute. It was. Yeah.
It was cute. Mm. So isn't that cute? We went to see Cinderella. But we went to see Cinderella for a couple of reasons. First of all, mega budget. Secondly, huge special effects. Thirdly, Kenneth Branagh. Mm-hmm. So these are all reasons to go see this film.
And the glitter.
And the glitter.
Yeah.
So we thought we would go see this because it was the big... technically geek film out this week. What was interesting,
the start of the American summer.
And one of the interesting things was that we actually saw it on the same night that they were having Chicks at the Flicks.
Girls Night Out.
There was a lot of women in that audience.
We walked down a pink carpet. They were giving out like girls boxes.
Camera crews there. They were getting out boxes of makeup. We didn't get our box of makeup, but anyway, so let's go through some stats as we always like to do. We're gonna say directed by Kenneth Branagh, written by Chris Weitz of all people, who is the guy who wrote with his brother, was it? American Pie.
I don't know that franchise. What's the title here? I've forgotten.
American Pie 1?
No, I don't know these. Is this The Wedding?
That was one of the later ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It stars hang on. Lily James and Richard Madden, Kate Blanchett, Stellan Skarsgård, and Helena Bonham Carter. Plus, it has appearances, and I put this separately because they are fairly small roles, of Derek Jacobi, Ben Chaplin, and Be Still My Heart.
Haley Atwell. I did not recognize.
I know. I was stunned by that. I actually leaned to Dave at one point, and she goes, I want to tell you something. And I leaned over and said, I'm an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, and I was like, what do you mean? He's like, that's Peggy Carter. I was like, oh, shit. Like, she's very blonde.
Very blonde. So I like this. I mean, for the IMDb thing, we could just basically say, you know, read the fairy tale, stupid, you know? But
no, we got to hear the IMDb.
But IMDb says, when her father unexpectedly passes away, young Ella finds herself at the mercy of her cruel stepmother and her daughters. Never one to give up hope, Ella's fortunes begin to change after meeting a dashing stranger. Really?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Let's have a look at the trailer now. I really want to play this trailer, and I'm going to play as much of it as I can, but there's no point in playing the whole thing because this is an audio show.
Spoilers.
This is, without a doubt, a trailer which makes Dave's reasoning for not watching trailers real. It's a 2 minute and 40 second trailer that tells every story beat in order of this movie.
We got to pull one of these up every week, I think. Next week we'll do Iron Man or Prometheus.
So this is quite fascinating.
I want to tell you a secret that will see you through all the trials that life can offer. Have courage and be kind.
She'll merely be your stepmother, and you'll have two lovely sisters to keep you company. So I'll know, as far away as I may be, that you'll be safe.
Wouldn't you prefer to eat when all the work is done, Ella?
Yes, stepmother.
Oh, you needn't call me that. Madam will do.
Cinder wench.
Dirty Ella.
Cinderella.
Are you all right? Miss, what do they call you?
Never mind what they call me.
I'm sorry.
It's not your doing.
Nor yours either, I'll bet. I hope to see you again, miss.
And I you.
Ella, you have more kindness in your little finger than most people possess in their whole body.
It was my mother's old dress.
It would be an insult to take you to the palace dressed in these old rags. You shall not go to the ball.
Excuse me.
Why are you crying?
Who are you?
That's better.
My fairy godmother.
Now, where are those mice?
And you find they're really comfortable.
Now off you go.
For you shall go to the ball.
They're all looking at you.
Believe me, they're all looking at you.
Where there is kindness, there is goodness. And where there is goodness, there is magic.
I have to see her again.
Are you looking for this?
And credits.
Barring the final 10 minutes, that was every single scene
major in plot order. Point, including all the surprises.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the part that gets me. Even including all the surprises, like the special effects, like the reveal of the fairy godmother. And you sit there and go, well, and I know it's Cinderella, which means that realistically, you know what you're getting when you go in.
Yeah.
There's no real changes here
at all.
But
this just cements that you know what
you're
getting.
But this just cements everything as you go in. And you go, wow, okay, that's the Reader's Digest version. Yeah. I really don't need to see the film because I've seen everything. That all being said, I actually quite like this film.
So did I.
surprisingly. And it is a literal adaptation of the 1950s Cinderella Disney
which I'd
style,
never seen.
Which you'd never seen and I had. But I mean...
But I knew the story.
Aside from being a musical, this is not a musical. It is that story. It is that version of Cinderella. It is glass slippers, not gold. It doesn't have the eyes pecking out. It doesn't have any of the original Brothers Grimm stuff that made Cinderella. So this is Disney's Cinderella. And that being said, it's one of the most beautiful films I've seen in a long time.
Super well shot.
It is
super well
gorgeous.
Shot.
Every like with Big Eyes, vistas were like paintings. Yeah. You know, with this small
and
exception,
he moves the camera so effectively.
And I mentioned this to you on the night, and we never actually came back to elaborate. I am a big fan of a fluid camera. I'm not even talking about a pan. I'm talking about the idea that as a scene is playing out, we have those slow moves on a camera, which is just giving you that atmosphere. And when you can actually get those cuts right where it will go from one fluid movement to another fluid movement. And the master of this was in a 1980s movie called The Company of Wolves by Neil Jordan, which was a retelling. It was an almost acid trip and fueled version of Little Red Riding Hood. And it was fabulous. And Neil Jordan's camera in that never stood still. Yeah. It was always slowly moving forward, slowly moving sideways.
Another good
example
of this is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Gilliam's
movie.
Yes,
gives that kind of oily, drug-infused thing. And
like not 1 second of that film is without a still shot.
Branagh does have still shots, but he also has this beautiful, and you were saying the other day, he has this knack for shooting slightly oddly high or oddly low angles. And so he's always keeping things moving and it's always kind of fluid.
It's not just this like technical achievement. It's like, yes, it's that too, but it's also unusual.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's different. And it's like there's a real care and like to do something different.
This is well planned out. This is where he's actually playing.
This isn't just like, let's move it over here.
No, he's
planned
each shot.
Let's layer every image.
So that when we cut, we are cutting to something that is appropriate to match what we had before.
And there's like real interesting foreground elements.
I am stunned by the way that this is not in 3D.
Yeah, like it's like it was shot for it.
And I forgot to look this up whether or not there was a 3D. but the cinema we were in, which has 3D sessions,
yeah,
had no 3D sessions.
Yeah.
It surprises me this is not 3D, because there are actually shots in this where you go, that's a 3D shot,
yeah,
where with four layers of depth of rolling hills and stuff. You sit there and go, why isn't this in 3D, you know? Or the ball with those big sweeping shots of chandeliers.
Maybe like they tried it out and then the dimming of the glasses just nulled all the color. Like,
that's possible because it's gorgeously colorful.
Yeah, because it's so vibrant. It's like super vibrant. Maybe like they just put glasses on and tested and was like...
Maybe they said that this was magical enough. It doesn't need it.
Yeah, because that's what happens with 3D. It still dulls.
Yeah.
Like they can't, there's no way to fix it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, this is not a perfect film in any way. It is, and it is very much a family film.
Yeah.
So it's not, if you're cynical and you kind of have a cold heart,
yeah,
don't bother. Yeah. This is about a film which revels in happy endings.
Yes.
It's reveling in that idea that hope wins out over all and be kind to each other. And it is just, but the thing I liked about it was I don't think I ever felt like I was being schmaltzed to. Yes. I never felt like I was going.
It's never condescending. It's, no. Yeah. And I think we had a conversation after we walked out where we were talking about sincerity.
Mm.
And if it comes across as honest,
yeah,
it works.
And if you
and nothing in this is cynical.
It's, no, and Branagh obviously set out to turn a fairy tale onto screen, and that was his goal. And he achieved it. He achieved his goal perfectly. He's not trying to make War and Peace.
Yeah.
He's making Cinderella, and he's making the best Cinderella that you can make.
Absolutely. It's like he's making it simple enough for kids to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but not to condescend to adults.
Yeah, and adults aren't going to sit there and cringe. They're going to go, okay, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and for people like us as well, it's like there are moments in the movie where I got bored.
Mm.
You know, but I didn't get bored in the sense of like, oh, I want to leave, or I'll go to the bathroom or whatever. I'll grab a cigarette or anything. Yeah. It was just like, you know, you look at how beautiful a shot's lit or how well it's performed. And there's just so much going on here beyond just...
And one of the bigger factors is this film is actually slightly too long.
It is. It is a little bit long.
At 100 and something minutes, it needed to be shaved by about 10 minutes.
Especially because you have the... I guess that's where I got bored too. Yeah. Like, particularly in the whole, like, Derek Jacobi, the king, and the rules of the kingdom, and the bureaucracy,
slightly different on this, because I actually really quite like the Derek Jacobi stuff, you know?
No, it's more Jacobi and his underlings, and his dealings with Stellan Skarsgård and all the other guards.
Right, that's fair enough.
Like, maybe they could have cut out, like, there's a corruption storyline in the movie involving...
Which you didn't need, no.
Cate Blanchett and Stellan Skarsgård.
The Duke.
Whatever it is. They call it the kingdom. It's not the Grand Duke.
The Grand Duke.
Yeah.
That's right.
And this kind of stuff is like, if it's for kids, like, this is going to sail over their heads and they're going to get bored anyway. Mm. Like, just cut out that fat.
And keep Cinderella in every scene.
With
the original Disney cartoon, the stepmother is already wicked enough.
Mm.
We don't need to bring anybody else into this. You know, she's already horrible.
Yeah.
You know?
We didn't need some motivation or some last minute plan. And that's kind of cool because Cate Blanchett does an amazing job in this movie, I think, as well.
Because, she's basically doing the same thing she does anytime.
Because it is a real one note. Like every character in the movie is one note. Mm. Like essentially, like there is no depth to the movie. If you're looking for depth, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah,
you know, and the movie doesn't attempt to be deep and meaningful. It's telling you a very simple love at first sight story. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's love at first sight the movie. Yeah. It's like, you know, she falls in love with the charming prince and you know, he's really handsome and she's gorgeous and, you know, but I can't get to the ball and my stepmother's evil and will I break out of my life?
It's also no Maleficent where it's trying to reinvent the wheel or trying to change it. It's not telling you another variation of the story or even Alice in Wonderland when they did that. This is a very straight telling.
Yeah. And one of the kind of things too is that like it feels animated.
In
a weird way. Like it just, I don't know, really works when you think about it. And now having a night to think about it too, it's like, kind of worked.
It did.
Because I came out of it a little bit negative, like in comparison to you, Dave. Mm. Like I was a bit, I think it's in the middle of the road, you know. But
if we were
thinking about it a lot, if I was like going in there going like, is this the official competition at Cannes? I'd be a little bit more.
Oh, and we know that there's a whole bunch of people out there that we know personally that are going to tear this thing apart.
Yeah, there are people that I know that if the movie was exactly the same, but in French, they would call it a masterpiece.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing is like, I think you and I are the same. We want to steer away from that pretentious bullshit.
I go to the movies to have fun.
It's fucking a Disney movie. It's got a Frozen short before it.
Which is great, by the way.
Which was also enjoyable. It's a Disney movie. Like, pull your head out.
Yeah.
You know, like,
that's the thing. Yeah. You're going to see a family film that is
this movie
immensely enjoyable if you just want to go and feel a ray of hope. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, there's down the hall, you can go see a movie about somebody's inner turmoil in their life and what have you. Mm. This is about a girl who is just insanely optimistic about everything.
Yeah. She's so bubbly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And did we mention she's gorgeous?
She just
fall in love with her.
And I mentioned it to you, and you actually said, "Yeah, I can kind of see that." Does she not look like a very young?
Yeah, this is
very
right.
young Jessica Lange. She's got the same overbite and everything, and the same smile. Yeah. You know, and it's like you sit there, and as soon as I saw her on screen,
she's not like ultra babe.
No.
Like she's just
radiant.
Lovely. Yeah. You know, yeah.
When she walks into the ball in that blue dress, she is radiant.
Yeah. You buy it completely.
Yeah. And you sit there and go, you understand why the people part the way and the prince is smitten with her completely. It is just, there is something about her, and you just know, you said, she would have walked into the casting room and they would have gone, hired. Everybody else go home.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, forget it.
It's like, there she is. Yeah. You know, it's done.
It's done. Sold. You know? You look good in blue. You know? Yeah.
The one that I didn't actually truly buy, the one that didn't sell the character to me completely at first, was Helena Bonham Carter.
Sure, yeah.
When she was the old lady. As soon as she became the fairy godmother, she was quite funny.
Yeah, she was great, yeah.
And I think it's a combination of the fact that I don't think it was quite well thought out, but also that I didn't think the makeup was very good. And so, because she looked like she was having trouble in moving her mouth.
Yeah.
And so when she's there, you're going, from a film with this much money, that's not actually a very good makeup job. It's not actually a very good character. But then as soon as she, in the trailer, you see she throws her wand in the air and turns into the glorious fairy godmother. She's hysterical.
Mm.
And then let's face it, Helena Bonham Carter is nuts. And so she's ready to have fun at any cause. We should also talk about the music for just a minute. Music here is by Patrick Doyle, who has scored, I think, everything that Branagh has done. I don't know if he actually much works outside of Branagh's world. I did bring a little sample of the music because it was interesting. When you heard this track, you didn't know who had scored it. And you actually thought it was Danny Elfman at first.
Yeah, at one stage, yeah.
So let's have a listen. This is called The Pumpkin Chase. Point, I think, is when you actually start to think it sounds like Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
It's that particular
riff
right there.
That's what I turned to, I think, during the movie.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, who does the score? Yeah.
What's interesting is Patrick Doyle, you're probably more familiar with him from another score, very geek-related score, which would be this one. Right, he scored the original Thor. So when the first Thor came out, which is also directed by
Special K.
Hey, Special K. Yeah, that's what you thought he should call his biography.
Yeah, that's right. I love like in particular, like because I remember sitting here, not sitting here, but during the movie when it started, I turned to you and I was like, man, like can't they just have a second of silence here? You know, like it was wall-to-wall music and it was becoming distracting. And I was glad I leaned over to you because you said something along the lines
It was a very particular practice with Walt himself.
Yeah.
Which is that whole, what got known within the industry, not from Walt, but what got known in the industry as Mickey Mousing the music, which was basically the music was as much a character as anybody else. And when Mickey would run into something, the music would crescendo. Yeah, it's like the music actually told you exactly what to feel at any given time in the film. And the score to this is very much like that.
Yeah, and Dave told me that while we were watching it.
Yeah.
And that kind of helped me relax a bit on it. Because like all I could focus on from the beginning was just like, just they're talking, shut up. You know, like
a moment of silence, yeah, please.
Please, because I thought, oh, here we go. It's just gonna be non-stop for 2 hours, just
but you actually fall into the rhythm of that.
Yeah, you totally get easily. Into it. Once you sort of switch off the critic brain and you just go like, this is gonna be a cartoon, you know, and it's gonna be aimed at kids and aimed at girls and, you know, all that stuff, you really get into it and enjoy it. You know,
I would watch this film again.
I would too. Yeah, I'm definitely going to buy this
on Blu-ray. I will buy it,
the technical stuff alone,
because it's beautiful. Do we say like, it is beautiful?
It is fucking like Merchant Ivory. Like,
yeah,
like,
it is
like they lit the shit out of this movie.
Yeah,
like it is a stunning looking.
They
movie.
Did not
like,
miss a beat on any frame in this film. They basically every single frame they went. It's is like, that as fucking, good as it can be?
Yeah.
Let's reframe it. Yeah. You know, it's like
Terrence Malick kind of stuff.
And let me just tell you, you've never seen so many chandeliers in your
life.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah,
Lord.
And they do stuff that's kind of funny. Like it's not like cloying or annoying.
Yeah.
It's like they're going to use glitter.
Yeah.
But they're going to use a fuckload of glitter. like they for no reason. Like she's going to walk in a room and they're going to just someone off screen is throwing glitter.
Well, I love it.
But it looks awesome.
When she gets her dress, right?
Yeah.
There's all the sparkles and everything of her getting a dress. And not only does she get the new dress, but suddenly she's got little pearls in her hair.
Yeah.
And she's got glitter all over her skin. And she's just, once again, I use that word, she is radiant.
Yeah, you know, she's like Dazzler.
And then they give her the glass slippers, which are fine looking slippers, let me tell you. I don't know how you walk in glass slippers. Quite frankly.
And I mean, like, you can sit there and do a lot of things. Like you can sit there and go, like, what's the messages this is sending to young girls? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. Ignore that. The filmmakers didn't think about that.
Do you know what? You know? No, actually, I think they did. Because the message is, be kind, be good, you will be rewarded.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know
Which
what I mean?
Which is not what I was going to say.
Not to little girls. It is to everyone.
It's to everybody.
And that's the thing. It maybe look like it's aimed at little girls and everything else, but I think that message, I think the ultimate message of Cinderella, the Disney version of Cinderella, and quite frankly, if we did the Grimm version of Cinderella, that's a whole different story. But if we did the Disney version of Cinderella, basically that film is just saying, be good.
Yeah.
If you are good, you will eventually
be
rewarded.
It's karma.
You know?
Yeah.
And I love that. And I mean, once again, it's Cinderella. I don't think there is a spoiler we can have
no,
here.
No, there's like awesome stuff in the movie too, like that they really focus on. Like instead of focusing on, oh, isn't he attractive and you should get in your corset or you better not, he won't look at you. You know, like they don't focus on those elements.
Well,
like,
the ugly sisters do.
Well, they're ugly and they're horrible.
Ugly sisters. What I love is
But I was just going to say what they do kind of focus on is stuff like, you know, like Cinderella like meets the prince and when she has to leave, she goes home and her thing is not like, I'm going to sit down here and cry and act like a wuss. Like, oh no, my life's over, blah, blah. She goes, that was a beautiful memory and I'll always have that memory.
And she actually says, I'm going to write this down so that I never forget this memory.
You know? And that kind of sentiment's really cool. You know, like it's
while
just
she
like,
feeds
you know,
cheese to the mice.
Well, oh yeah, that's another thing we can talk about. Thank you for reminding me about this. That was my one major. That's why it goes from a 5 stars to a 4 for me.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I would aim it somewhere for me. It falls between and it fluctuates as the film goes, but it fluctuates between a 3.5 and a 4. You know, and that's because there are moments. And as much as we are talking about how much we liked it, there are moments where you just kind of go, move along, and
it's the CGI-ness.
There is one shot, which is this beautiful shot out of the window. It's right early on in the film. And as beautiful as that shot is, and it's beautifully laid out, and it's incredibly symmetrical in this pathway. And then there's this dorky-looking CGI goose walking right in the middle of the path.
There's like a CGI animal in every shot.
Yeah, and the CGI for the animals rates from extraordinarily good to really mediocrely bad.
Yeah, I think the difference is when the animal's actually doing something important to the movie.
It's good.
It's good.
But when they're a throwaway.
When it's just there in the back. Like, there's stuff in this movie where it's like a beautifully lit shot, like from a really weird angle.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is so interesting. And then like in the background, like real small, you just see a goose's head pop into the window.
And
go, you know, and you're like, what are you doing? Like,
and I guess, you know, I mean, once again, it's for kids and it's the humorous moment and all this sort of stuff. But those sort of moments, as an adult, you kind of go, wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, that's what breaks it for us. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's stuff like that. But like, I don't know. I'm typically an idiot anyway. Like, and so like I have a warped sense of view of everything. And it's like the thing that annoyed me the most about this movie was just every time you saw the mice, they were eating cheese. And it was never explained where they got the cheese from. And I was like, you know, you can see a mouse eating some cheese once. And you're right. Like, yeah, it found the cheese.
Right.
You can see it twice and you can go, yeah, I guess it had some more cheese.
Mm.
You can see it three times and you can be like, okay, I can still buy it. But Kenneth Branagh shows you the mice
eating cheese
maybe 100 times in this movie.
Well, every time you see the mice, they are eating cheese.
To be fair, there are a couple of times when the mice don't have cheese.
Well, that's just because they need their hands.
That's just, yeah, because they have to walk and stuff. Yeah. But like, man, they're like three blind mice, aren't they, in the original? Four blind mice?
No, they're not blind. I don't think,
that's a different story.
That's a different fairy tale.
Yeah. But it really started to irritate me. Every time they came on screen, it was just like,
see, on the flip
side, I get it, they're mice and they eat cheese.
On the flip side, the mice didn't bother me. So
it was just one of those, like, where, I don't know, my reality was broken.
We are going to have to move on. We are about to hit the 2-hour mark on this show, which is ridiculous. And,
yeah, shit.
But that's okay. So first of all, as we always do,
I'm
with one of these...
I'm supposed to be at a party.
What time is your party?
7.
But that's 7 now, so let's move this on as fast as possible.
And basically, I like doing this more than
that. Let's move this on to, first of all, as we always say on this show, we rate the film with, will you recommend it to your friends? Probably not to your friends.
No, sorry, I was coughing for some reason. I probably wouldn't have seen this movie at all if we weren't doing this show. Like, it just wasn't even on my...
I dragged you to it.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't even on my radar.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't really like Kenneth Branagh in general. Like, I don't hate him, but it's not on my radar. And I just wouldn't have gone. And so...
And your last Branagh experience wasn't good.
Yeah, it wasn't. Which was Jack Ryan.
Yeah. Go back and listen to that review,
people. But I'd actually say, look, like, there are certain people that I wouldn't recommend this to because I know that they're just dickheads and that they're not going to enjoy this anyway. Like, even if this was, like, the greatest film in the history of Disney, they'd still be like, it's fucking cynical.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd say if you're someone that enjoys movies and you're fair and you're open-minded...
And you just want to have fun.
And you just want to have a good time, then I totally recommend this, 100%.
And I'm going to say, if you are...
Take your wife, take your girlfriend, or take your
boyfriend. If you are a family person or you are in a relationship, this is a date movie.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a fun time.
This is a date movie. You know? This is a family movie. People who just want to go to the cinema and have a bit of fun, feel a bit of joy, absolutely, I would recommend this to people.
And frankly, you know what you're getting.
Yes.
You know?
It's on the box.
Yeah.
Okay? Now... I wanted to spend more time on this, but we're going to have to kick through this pretty fast.
We can if you want to.
Well, the show gets a bit long after a while, but I'm going to say in our weird food section, you kept talking about the mice eating cheese.
Yes.
So in the most awkward segue in the history of shows, I'm going to say that our weird food section
is actually
a throwback to a previous story. Many, many, many months years ago, I should say years, it was actually probably years at this point, we did in the weird food section on Geek Actually a book that came out. And at the time, we were laughing really hard. We knew that it was, and you know, it was about whether or not this book was even real. And the book was called Natural Harvest, and it was actually a collection of recipes that work with semen. And we thought this was the funniest thing we've ever heard. Well, times have moved on. And yes, the book is real, and yes, you can buy it on Amazon. And in fact, we expand this to the fact that he's released a new book called Semenology. And it's on the website cookingwithcum.com. And you can actually, this is actually now a collection of drink recipes using semen. And they actually have a little video the website, which doesn't have very much talking. So we're going to leave the volume out at this point. Well, actually, no, we'll leave the volume up because most of it is just sound effects, really. And basically, they're making the semen mojito. So in the video, so this is from the Semenology book, and I'm actually...
This is from my latest book, Semenology. This drink is called the Macho Mojito.
The Macho Mojito.
Oh, man. Right. Oh, no, sorry, that's just sugar.
No, I thought it was... The little glass next to it.
Oh, yeah, shit.
So there's two glasses on screen. One is the big one where he's making the mojito. He's put the sugar in, he's putting the lime in. There's a little shot glass sitting beside it, which is the semen. All right, so he's putting in more lime. I wish he would narrate all the way through, but he doesn't.
Like
doesn't.
Jamie Oliver style.
Yeah. Now I put in the lime. Yeah. So he's putting in the lime here.
A bit more. It's a bit. A bit of these leaves.
So here's the mint leaves. Now you have to crush the mint leaves down. Oh, no, so first of all.
The rum.
The rum.
I like mine strong.
He likes his strong. Okay. So he put in the rum, and then you have to crush the mint leaves. I know how to make a mojito, right? You crush the mint leaves, which actually breaks the mint flavor into it. We're not up to the cum part yet, people. All right.
It's coming.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't mean that.
Would you reword that, please?
I'll file that one.
Here's the ice.
This video would have been improved dramatically if he was also jerking off at the same time.
Making the little cup, yeah. That's lots of ice.
And then you just need to add a little.
All right. Here we go. So he mixes all that together. So we're at the mojito part, okay? And the soda water. Here we go. That goes in next. Fills up the cup. Beautiful. Looking good. That's a mojito right there.
Yep.
Okay. But no, here comes the.
Add some powdered sugar to the semen.
So a little bit
of powdered sugar
into the semen.
And whisk it nicely.
So we whisk up our semen into a nice frothy semen mess. Okay. And then he tastes it. Wait for it.
A little more powdered sugar.
There's another person in the room. Wait for it. Boy, semen gets frothy. All right, wait for it.
It's there, right there.
And.
Perfect.
Can I taste?
So there's somebody else in that room with him.
And then we just add the semen over.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Come on, semen.
And now I don't want to drink that drink.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Look at that.
I know a lot of people
to
doing
Willem Alexander.
To what?
I don't know.
I know a lot of people eat semen, right, you know, but is it because of choice?
The funny thing about it is I looked at the recipe pack because he's actually got a copy of the recipe here on the link. But I want you to have a look at the picture that he actually
high in
has.
High protein, Dave.
I want you to have a look at the picture that is actually on this recipe card when it comes up. Our internet here on this particular computer is very slow.
Get semen cuisine.
It actually says, if you look at the picture, it's the semen is all cascading down past the ice. It actually says in the recipe, carefully spoon the sweet froth into the side of the glass so that it gracefully cascades down the glass.
This is fun.
So, if you want to have a bit of fun, go to Cooking with Cum, and you can
do
go
you swallow, Dave.
I will never try this recipe. Can I tell you? I will never try this recipe. I don't see the point. But there you go. There is weird food from around the world.
That was amazing.
That was amazing. That was worth the wait. Mm. And I have to also say, just in the weird food section, I've actually got it in the finally because. But no, I'm just going to throw this out there. This is just a throwaway. Link is here if you want to find out more information.
I guess it doesn't tell you to make sure to eat a lot of pepper first or anything, or
no.
Like pineapples or something. Or
you know what they say about pineapple juice drinkers, though? That's actually about water sports more than anything else. So I know.
I'm starting to get a bit hard right now.
We
got hard before.
I know way. I know way too much about this. I shouldn't know about this.
This is
terrible.
Why we do these shows.
This is true. In Korea. Yes. You can actually pay to watch people eat on the internet. Enough said. Go read the article. People just eat on camera and you can watch them eat. Why? Fuck knows. But just because we can, we're going to go out. This is fine. This is our finally. I found this one for you, Dave.
This is awesome.
Okay? This is an homage to you. This is a clip of Will Ferrell on The Late Late Show. Singing the Star Trek theme, which I thought was brilliant.
Have you ever
a listen.
Done stand-up? Stand-up seems like it'd be a natural fit for you.
I tried a little bit, yeah. I tried for like a year and a half.
That's recent, too.
I did a lot of Star Trek material. In fact, I would start my act by singing the theme to Star Trek from beginning to end.
I think we'd all love to hear it.
Okay.
Only if you want to.
Yeah.
There you go. There's Will Ferrell singing the Star Trek theme on television.
Oh my God.
He has a voice like an angel. What can I tell you?
Amazing.
All right. If you agree or disagree with anything we have to say, or if you hated Cinderella, let us know. Send your email to feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail on Sydney number 02-8011-4167. You can try the Skype line, Geek Actually, all one word, but it doesn't always send to the voicemail. I don't know why, but that number will. If you love comic books, listen to our other show, Behind the Panels, which you can hear at behindthepanels.net. If you love podcasts, well, we have one of those too. We've got a show called Podcast Pillow Fort, which is podcastpillowfort.com, and it's literally a show about podcasts, so that's always fun to listen to. Find these great shows and other merchandise, news, Facebook fan pages, Twitter accounts, anything that we have to do at all, go to geekactually.com. That's where you're going to find everything. And if you want more Dave, go to damngoodcup.com, or you can find him on Twitter at Dave Longo. Find more of me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. Dave, do you have anything to add?
Tell him, Steve. Dave.
Thank you very much. Good night. Geek on, everybody.